Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 95. Listeners, travelers, grumpy bears, lend me your ears. We come to talk Doctor Who, not tangents. I'm Keith.
I don't believe you. I'm Sean.
And I'm Glenn.
We don't tangent on purpose. Usually.
I don't believe you.
Sometimes people tangent on purpose. How are you guys?
Good.
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
Sarah feeling better?
She is feeling better. But not a whole lot, but a little bit.
She's sick today or all weekend?
Since last Sunday.
Oh, gosh.
She had sinus infection and bronchitis. Mm. So she's been on antibiotics and was taking Mucinex and decided the Mucinex wasn't helping enough. So she switched to Advil Cold and Sinus. Mm. And that's made a big difference. It up. Well, the Mucinex stopped the drainage and then the Advil has helped with the pressure. Mm.
This episode brought to you by pharmaceuticals. What can we do for you?
Well, we had a very low-key weekend.
When you find the right one.
This episode brought to you by morphine. What are we talking about today?
Nothing.
Everything.
Nothing and everything.
I'm sorry, I just made a drug joke. Does that all of a sudden bump us into that PG-13 category
for this podcast? No, I think we're okay. It was quasi. It's still PG.
Okay. Sorry, guys.
Well, we...
kids, don't do drugs.
Don't do drugs. Unless your parents give you cold medicine. Unless your parents say, take this, it'll make you feel better.
Unless it's the recreational drugs.
Unless it's the...
Not addictive and...
Not recreational.
Don't serve as gateway drugs into the harder stuff. And no, that's not our views and opinions.
I'm just saying, Sheldon was told don't do drugs, so he won't drink coffee.
Oh, what'd you do this weekend, Keith? I know one of the things you did.
Had a pretty low-key weekend. Had dinner with some friends, and then went to a going-away party for a coworker on a Saturday night. Our one of our main anchors is leaving us to go to Florida, so had a going-away party for her, and then today we did some family stuff.
Sean?
I was sad to see about the anchor leaving. And I watched.
I'm not. I like her, but
we're used to people leaving.
Too. Yeah, I was gonna say
it's the news.
How many people have you seen come and go, Justin?
In 16 years, too many. Too many to count.
What else did I do? I watched two.
We can't talk about work anymore on the podcast.
True. Why not?
We got a new company that owns us. And it's publicly traded, so we're not allowed to say much.
Oh.
Which is why you'll see on my Facebook page that I don't list where I employ.
Yeah, I'm not listed either anymore.
Did you see what Tim, though?
To put the disclaimer on there, and anytime I posted any opinion, I'd be chastised.
Did you see what Tim put, though?
No.
He put down that he worked for a broadcaster in Northeast Kansas.
There you go.
That's his employment.
I'm going to do that. I like that. That's good. I like that.
I watched two Bond films.
Ooh,
this weekend.
You're speeding up to get done.
No. We watched.
Oh, you watched. Yeah, that's right. I saw your tweet.
World's Not Enough, and then Casino Royale, not the Daniel Craig one.
No.
Which I remember watching. I remember I had to have seen this at one point in time and watched it again with Mel and. That film is out there.
Wilf's in it.
Wilf is in it. I tweeted that.
Yeah.
He came.
I had forgotten until you told me.
He showed up in that taxi cab, and I started looking at him, and he had one line. I was like, that looks like Wilf. Sounds like Wilf. And then he gave another line. I was like, oh, I think that's Wilf. And I was like, who's Wilf? You know, Grandpa Wilf. Doctor Who Wilf? Yeah. And I had to intuba him while we were watching. It is Wilf.
That's one. I'm not going to delve into it. To tangent too much, but that's one of those films that I totally enjoy watching. I think it's fun. It's obviously not anywhere in the realm of James Bond, but it's a lot of fun, but it suffers from too many directors. I mean, because it's, what, four?
Four directors on that film. And I didn't know the backstory to it. I just knew it was an out there psychedelic 60s kind of film.
It's not really even psychedelic. Well, it's just
acid trip. I don't know.
There's that drug. That's not even the case. It's just one of those outlandish.
It's a farce. Films. But yeah. It goes beyond farce when you get into the mental psychological projections that Orson Welles is putting in Peter Sellers' head and all this kind of stuff. The documentary, by the way, if you haven't watched it, you totally need to watch the documentary. I didn't know it was four directors doing four different segments. Mm-hmm. So it was just each of them were given a chunk of the thing. And when the guy asked, he says, well, you know, I don't want to read the script. I want to read the book. Give me Casino Royale, the book. And they had to explain the Bond films have used everything from Casino Royale except the title and the casino. That's all we have. That's the only part of the book that we can do. Everything else is made up. And so they started kind of explaining why things were pieced together they were. I did not know that apparently Orson Welles had a huge dislike for Peter Sellers and refused to work with him. Yep. And that's why Peter Sellers jumps in the race car at the end to go save the day. And that's it. He just all of a sudden is there. And it's like, what happened? Why are we? That's why they fired him.
Yeah. No, I knew that.
It was a fascinating, it was one of those, you watch the movie and you kind of, you appreciate it. And then you watch the documentary and you gain this whole new
appreciation.
Wow. There was a lot of stuff to this. Huh?
I read a lot on after the we first time I saw it, I read a lot about it. So I knew a lot of the behind the scenes stuff.
And then, we had our first, Tribods Film Society meeting this week, which I think went pretty well. And then we're gearing up for War of the Worlds this weekend.
I'm excited.
WKBW.
Now you're doing two different.
I'm doing two different ones. We're welcome to come to both. You won't be off work though. I don't think in time for the other one. But yeah, through Tribods, through Washburn for the student university, we're doing the original Orson Welles War of the Worlds broadcast on Halloween night on campus. And people seem to actually be pretty excited about it. I got the nicest comment from my teacher because I'd cut together this little just bogus trailer just to kind of, you know, because I'm that guy. I make a trailer for a radio broadcast. Made sense.
Just as much as a trailer for a trailer.
Oh, have you seen this?
Yeah.
The 15 seconds of Iron Man teaser?
3, yeah.
It's the teaser for the trailer?
Yeah.
Yeah, insane. But, so I cut together a trailer for that, and she was just like, this is the coolest thing ever. And it's like, really? I did that like in 10 minutes with my iPad and your special effects movie program. And
oh, the FX?
Yeah, I downloaded that to the iPad.
Well, the cool thing is you can import them into iMovie.
Yeah, I did. That's exactly what I did. I imported it into iMovie and went da-da-da-da and made this little trailer. And she just thought that was the coolest thing ever. Like, I had spent months on it. Like, that was a 10-minute. The longest part of
that. There's an app for that.
The longest part of it was standing there holding the iPad, filming the bell tower on campus for 8 seconds while I was doing it. But, yeah, we're doing that Halloween night. And then my personal one is the Sunday before Halloween,
right?
Which is next Sunday.
That'll be before we record next week's show.
We'll be coming off the high of that. Yes. So the podcast next week might suffer because you know
it won't be as Who focused,
but WKBW radio in Buffalo. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yay!
And on a personal note, a victory this week. I got my mom off AOL.
Yay! Oh, yay! Who'd she sign up with?
Well, nobody. She's just with Yahoo now for her email. But she was actually using AOL as an internet provider.
Oh, she was.
Oh, yeah.
She was using what now?
She was using AOL as in her internet provider as well as her homepage email.
Well, you got her off of AOL.
Her off of AOL.
What's she on now to get on the internet then?
Internet Explorer.
Well, no. What's her service provider?
Her cable provider is. Oh, then she wasn't on AOL.
She was. She was paying for it. Yes.
Was she paying AOL? She was doing both.
I got you. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was doing both. Okay, then yes, absolutely. Yeah, no.
I thought she was still on dial-up.
Well, the way you talked to her 3 weeks ago, she was still on dial-up, and I was like, what?
No, she was still. Yeah, she, 3 years or I don't know how long it's been. Every time she
was
calling
paying
me
them for basically an email account is all she was doing. Yeah. When you can get those free anywhere.
Well, and she would call me. I have a virus, and I'd say, do you still use AOL? Well, yeah. Okay, then. Don't call me until it's over with because I'm not going to come over and pick. There's nothing I can do. If you're going to use AOL, you're going to have viruses. I'm sorry if there are any AOL listeners or supporters out there. Your product sucks.
I don't think that's true, but as long as you've got antivirus.
That is handed down. You know that I am not
all
the
technical
most...
opinions are that of Sean and not traveling.
We've joked before that I'm the Neanderthal of the group, and this is true to an extent. I don't know how the technology works. I just know that it works and that it, you know, I can utilize it. That's kind of the limit of my experience with this with anything. Uh-huh. And, you know, so I have it handed down to me from Matt and my cousin and IT people who are all like, ugh, and they've fought with it for years.
AOL gives you viruses.
It's just bad.
Not any more so than anything else.
I don't know.
maybe there are more weak links in AOL security.
Well, it's to the point where...
Where the email isn't as secure as possible.
You know where the weakest link for somebody to get viruses is?
The user.
It really is. It's visiting sites that are, you know, that have them.
Clicking on links in your email.
Yeah. And it's not having proper and updated antivirus software on your computer is what it is.
So. Yeah, I know my cousin Matt, who services laptops, has got to the point where apparently AOL bought out McAfee. And so he stopped using McAfee.
Because that's not true.
He's that adamant about it. I don't know.
That is not true.
This is the information that I passed on.
So again, anyway. The technical information being disseminated on tonight's show is that of Sean's and not Traveling the Vortex.
But it was a joyous thing to get her off of it. And you know, of course, you had to have the talk. And I was like, well, how do I get on the internet now?
You're already on the internet.
See this button on your computer, Mod? It says Internet Explorer.
So she was actually going through her AOL browser to get to the internet.
Yeah.
Wow. I think Sarah's dad does that stuff.
Oh, yeah. You see the Internet Explorer button? That allows you to explore
Which,
the Internet.
This is funny because I still have an AOL account that I can access and access the email, but I haven't paid them for 15 years.
I think I have two AOL accounts.
I can still get to my – I can log on. I've done it in the last five. All the time. Gotten onto the my AOL account. That's why I was shocked that they were suckering her into paying for stuff.
So, yeah.
Because I thought they were just at a point where they were relying on ads like everybody else. You know, yeah. Yahoo is all ad-based and everybody's ad-based.
I think it was probably one of those situations where, you know, there was a glitch in the billing, so we fixed it. I think that's what happened to her. So, yeah. Fun week.
All right.
Glenn, what about you?
Not a lot. Just went to Kansas City this weekend for my nephew's birthday party. And then we stopped by the Disney store because we're
still
on Disney.
Well, you
got to
talk about
Disney
what you ate, too.
Huh?
Yeah, let's talk about that tweet.
What?
Which you'll notice I didn't reply to
at all. Fazoli's. Now, we didn't actually go to Fazoli's, so we didn't get them walking around with the hot breadsticks. But my brother-in-law went and got Fazoli's. So instead of just having to go order one thing, I got to try everything because he just bought all the different, the different meals, brought them home, Fazoli's to go. Set on the table and you made your own plate. And then bags and bags and bags and bags of breadsticks. I was eating breadsticks the whole day I was there. It was so good. So I had got my Fazoli's, but you guys didn't.
It's about time.
Yeah. Yeah, because you guys were still like five up on me. But then, yeah, we went to the Disney store and looked around and kids talked us into buying them plush toys. And then last night's Disney movie was Little Mermaid. So,
you guys also wrapped your shoes.
We did. We wrapped.
We did. Yeah,
that was True Grit or Tough Grit on Friday. We wrapped shooting. We're still in the midst of editing and captioning. And
Sean's wrapped.
I'm wrapped.
Unless Dave still got the most of it in front of
Unless you want to put in a good word for an assistant editor, I'm happy to come down and weed through junk.
I don't know. Kellen might. Be happy for some editing help. I think he's doing a little bit of it. I think Dave's doing the bulk. I think Kellen, his role now is sorting the video.
Yeah.
Making sure, you know, this is here, this is here. And then I'm putting the closed captioning on it, which is monotonous. All right. Well, let's move on to news.
Our first bit of news is it's official, Shada. It's coming out on DVD. Now,
Shada!
We don't know how exactly it's coming on DVD, but it's a 3-disc collection We assume that it will be the VHS reconstruction, that they haven't done something new, but they haven't said what they have done. But it does include the Flash version. And
the Paul McGann Flash version?
Yes.
Nice.
The full title of the DVD release will be Shada with More Than 30 Years in the TARDIS, which is that documentary.
Right.
So that will be included. The list price is $39.99.
I think it's a sad day. I'm certain they didn't get the Ian Levine stuff, so it's not going to see the light of day.
Oh, yeah. And there's other bonus features, none of which really stood out to me, aside from at least that were Shada related. There's Taken Out of Time, Now and Then, Strike, Strike, Strike. So there's some nice, looks like behind the scenes.
I'm not sure how I feel about that.
stuff. About it.
What's on? Oh, it says TARDIS on it. Yeah. Sean is the showing Disney. Us a...
I never noticed that those were Daleks in the background.
Clearly a Disney, yeah, I've seen Disney-fied Doctor Who poster it's that somebody the, mocked up.
If Tim Burton made Doctor
oh, it
Who
is, yeah, it's as very a movie. Yeah.
Or when they were talking actually, about doing the really? Movie.
Yeah, because it's... Or maybe even... it looks a little like... the artwork for...
It looks like the Black Hole is no, what reminds me of the original.
Oz movie. The Great and Powerful. Or Oz
A little bit.
Great and Terrible. No, what the heck is it?
Great and Powerful, isn't it?
Is it powerful? Okay.
The James Franco movie?
The new one?
Yeah.
It is
yeah.
Great and Powerful.
Okay, Great and Powerful.
Oz was many things. He was never terrible.
He is in the book.
Was he?
Mm-hmm.
Was there a book? The Great and Terrible?
There's a... it's not Great and Terrible. It's something in Terrible.
Oh, this is the something and terrible.
I can't remember what it was. There's actually a chapter title of that, I think.
What's that drug you need to take when you remember things? This episode brought to you by Ginkoba.
But Shada's finally coming. Sorry, like we kind of speculated. January 8th is the date on that. In the U.S.
I kind of wish we'd have held on to our Shada review now.
If only they packaged the.
Oh, that's right. That's what. Oz, okay. Here. It's a quote from the book. Oz introduces himself as I am Oz the Great and Terrible. Who are you? Why do you seek me?
Good to know.
I knew I remembered that from the book.
Tangent. Also in news, we have a date for the next episode of Who? It will be. On Christmas Day.
I still fail to see why this is news. Well, you said that before the show, and I thought we know that.
We assumed.
We've had it confirmed. It's what confirmed. We've always known.
The BBC has officially said
it's going to air on Christmas.
Christmas. What about BBC America?
We don't
America?
Have a time.
What about BBC America?
I don't know if BBC America has either.
So we have no new information on this at this time, is what you're saying.
Yep.
Okay, then.
Well, the new information is that the BBC has confirmed that they will, in fact, do the Christmas special on Christmas Day, as they have every year prior, since Tennant came on board.
Have we been watching these on BBC?
No.
So it doesn't really apply to us anyway.
No.
Well, according to this,
but, so we have no new information.
But according to this article,
we're a global podcast.
We are a global podcast.
Well, so it applies.
Somebody somewhere, I'm sure, cares
and
about
I
that.
I guarantee that if they decided they weren't going to play it day and date on BBC America, we'd still be reviewing it Christmas night. So,
well, yes,
we've always said that if it doesn't, that we review it after the BBC airs it. So, yes, it is entirely. Relevant to
I'm
to
glad
us.
I helped you out with that.
It has not been titled.
He's convinced me.
And
but it's news.
But the time has not yet been announced and will slot in the
well,
usual...
Well, this is becoming worthless again.
late afternoon, early evening lineup. But the lineup is, I think, kind of interesting.
Well, how's there a lineup if there's no time?
Well, they're going to air Up.
Up?
Up. The up. Piscar... The Pixar.
Oh, yeah, Up. Okay,
Up,
all right.
The film.
why are we announcing
the usual
that?
Installments of EastEnders? The 9 o'clock slot this year falls to Call the Midwife, and then the Royal Family at 10. That's all the information.
What else we have for news? So,
wait. Now this is actually interesting again. Based on that lineup, Doctor Who's going to be what at
seven,
five?
At 7 at the latest.
Oh, because you didn't give the whole day. There was a hole in the schedule then.
Well, the only times they give is the 9 o'clock. Oh, I guess the earliest it could air is 8, or the latest it could air is 8, because they're saying they're airing up at some point. And then there's airing Call the Midwife before the Royal Family at 10.
Well, up is what, an hour and a half?
Yeah.
So let's figure that the Call the Midwife thing is an hour and the Royal thing is at 10. So the other one's at 9. That means up starts at no later than
7:30.
So
That's assuming that's the order they're doing
it. That's assuming that Doctor Who comes on one end or the other of that schedule, but he could be in the middle is what he's saying.
I'm saying
that's not the order.
I'm saying the earliest or the latest it would probably
be. There's no news here. Be quiet.
I scoffed at it when they said.
Nothing to see here. Move on.
Move along.
Also,
Oz the Great and Terrible.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain at BBC.
In the latest issue of Doctor Who magazine has surmised the expected running order of the next remaining 8 episodes and places the Neil Gaiman episode at number 7. I think that's the most notable because we know Moffat will write 1 and will write 8. Mark Gatiss will write, according to this, 3 and 6. 2 and 4 is written by Neil Cross, and 5 is written by Steve Thompson.
But we've already had 1 through 5.
This is reordering, starting with 2013.
I was about to go there, and I thought, no, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to pick on him. Sean did.
I'm looking at the sites.
Oh, that's starting the numbers over.
Well,
at 1.
At least in this list.
What's Cross's name?
Neil?
Neil Cross.
Neil Cross. Neil Gaiman.
The first Mark Gatiss script, directed by Douglas McKinnon, apparently guest stars David Warner and Liam Cunningham.
David Warner, we called that one.
The other Mark Gatiss stars Diana Rigg. Guest stars Diana Rigg.
Now that one we knew.
Yeah.
But we didn't know where.
Yeah, that's the first one.
No, that's the second
one. Oh, it's the second.
According to this list, it's the second.
Well, they were saying that it was like the... Oh, no. How many we had? We've had 5.
We've had 5.
Plus yeah, we've Christmas known it was 7.
6.
Yeah.
No, so that'd make it 8.
It does make it 8, because that's what they were saying was number 7. Yeah.
It makes it 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, according to this list.
Didn't he just say it was second?
The Diana Rigg. It's the second Mark Gatiss story.
Oh. See, he doesn't listen to us when he talks.
No, he doesn't listen to us.
Maybe you don't listen to me when I talk.
I don't blame him. I don't listen to us when we talk either, so...
Oh, boy.
Those are the only notable guest stars I see on this list, too.
You know, it looks like Neil Cross's... This will be his first Doctor Who story, as far as I could tell. He's written for Spooks, Luther, and The Fixer for television.
Ooh, which Luther stars Paul McGann. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Regularly?
I believe so.
Hmm. He's won an Emmy for...
It's on Netflix.
Is it a Qumran?
There's a
Emmy?
Paul McGann vehicle on Netflix, and you don't know anything about it, Sean.
There are many things on Netflix, and
but you have Netflix now, right? Because you had to do
it. I do have Netflix now, and I've been. I feel bad because I have been using it for the assigned, homework on these documentaries.
Yeah,
but I've also been using it to mainline Buck Rogers in the 25th Century as background noise when I do homework because I saw all these as kids. So right, I don't really have.
Didn't you have the DVD set?
I did have the DVD set.
Did you sell the DVD set?
I will be shortly.
So you could have watched all these long ago, regardless.
Well, yeah, but I just didn't.
Okay. How many things are on my shelf? You questioning me? You know how this works.
So
I'm just questioning the fact that you're using Netflix instead of your own DVD.
Well, because the beauty with Netflix is I can just hit a button and it keeps going. With a DVD, I'd have to get up and
there's no play all. On a disc?
Yeah, but I'd have to change it when the disc ends.
How many episodes are you watching in a row?
A lot.
He's got a lot of homework.
Okay. I have a lot of homework. And
how far into Buck Rogers are you?
I'm episodes. I'm getting ready to start 17. Episode 17. And episode 14 was a clip show. Now think about the logic of this. 14 episodes in and you did a clip show? And they've got Buck hooked up to this memory thing about trying to figure out who might be trying to kill him. And it's like, well, you remember that one time we went and did this? It's like, yeah, it was last week. Sorry, tangenting apparently. I got the flashing iPad.
I held my tangent sign up.
Could you like put that in? Can you use your movie program to special up the effects on the tangent sign?
Make it flash.
So it's got little flashing lights, like an applause light, but tangent, so it's a little more. Or could it flash red and black?
I think I can animate this one to make it flash.
Yeah, if you could flash it red and black so that I can see it better, I think that would help.
What else we got, guys?
There's one more bit
of... Wait, back to this.
Back to the episode list?
Yeah. How excited are we that Neil Gaiman is writing an episode? Yes. That's fantastic.
I mean, we heard speculation, but we never had any...
He wrote my favorite episode of the Matt Smith era, so there we go.
Yeah, that's really high up there.
It's really fantastic. Really high up
there. Yeah.
I want to talk about how excited Keith is that Mark Gatiss is coming back when a few short months ago, he had no idea who Mark Gatiss was.
Sherlock converted me. I'm a Gatiss fan now.
And a few short months before that, he was like, Dr. What?
There's that. As Chrissy pointed out with that.
Who?
Who's on first? No, what?
What's on second? I don't know.
He's on third base. We should do that. Not tonight, but at some point we should.
You had a little bit of information.
As a side trip.
Oh, hey, I want to throw something out before we go to this next one. By the way, our friends over at the Doctor Who Bar, their Twitter account was hacked.
Oh.
Hackers have hijacked their Twitter account. So if anybody is getting tweets from Doctor Who Bar, those are not... Don't click on links. Don't do anything like that. They're back up and running, and they're actually Doctor Who Bar 2 until they get their Twitter account back.
But is it at Doctor Who Bar?
At Doctor Who Bar is the Twitter
handle.
Not
the Doctor Who Bar. It's
Now you ask.
I just want to clarify.
Double check it.
Because I think you're right. I think it's just Doctor Who Bar. But
no, it is the. Yeah.
It is the.
At the Doctor Who Bar account.
Wow. So no, they completely exists. Lost access
yeah,
to
they
the account.
Lost access. Now, it sounds like maybe they got it like... Through Twitter. Twitter has closed the account, so
okay. You
probably won't get anything in it now, but they are back up, and they are now at Doctor Who Bar 2. There's no the in front of it.
Doctor Who Bar 2.
At Doctor Who Bar 2. Until further notice, they say.
Interesting.
So I just want to throw that out because they're one of the crews that do the same thing we do with Friday Night Who. Doctor Who Bar is one of those ones where you watch and tweet along, so I wanted to make sure we got that out there for everybody.
Yes, indeed.
Sean, you had a little bit of news this week as well.
I did, by listener request. I think it was last week.
Two weeks ago.
When we did the...
Because we kept falling down on the job, not getting this looked up.
I got a reply. Yeah, it was totally our fault, not the fault of anybody associated with the agency. But I get an email reply. We'd done some checking on... we announced Janet Fielding has been diagnosed with cancer. And that there was this foundation, Project Motormouth, which had kind of been set up to... help assist with donations to her charity, which is Project Motor House, I believe is the name of the... I should check on that. We'll put it in the show notes. But they're doing that big convention over in England where all of the surviving doctors are going to be there. At all?
Most of. 9 and 11 are not.
9 and 11 are not. Baker's confirmed, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe so.
Because it's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8...
10.
Baker may not be confirmed for that. I don't remember. At any rate, they're doing a big one-day convention, which has sold out. So if you were thinking, hey, I'm going to get... No, don't. Just put the suitcase away because you're not going to make it. But they did send us the following email message, which reads, thank you so much for your message. We have been inundated with messages of support for Janet, and she is really very touched. We are hoping to have the online donation system...
Colin Baker is confirmed. Tom is not.
Thank you. We're hoping to have the online donation system in place shortly. Please check back to the website, www.projectmotormouth.org.uk, and Twitter, which is @JFMouthOnLegs, for updates. Thank you again, Project Motorhouse and Janet Fielding. Now, in conjunction with the convention, 10th Planet Events does have, if you go to the convention webpage, 10th Planet has got a whole slew of things up there, like merchandise-wise, which you can purchase. And I believe that some of those proceeds do go to this, if I understood the setup correctly. But I wanted to get it straight from the motor mouth's mouth, so to speak.
Apparently, they've also confirmed Simon Fisher Becker and Fraser Hines.
Yes, that was the other piece of news. Thank you. That I couldn't remember. So there's that. But yeah, if you want to just make a donation and don't want to purchase anything through 10th Planet, they will have an online system up shortly. So now you know.
And knowing is half the battle. G.I. Joe!
You know what the other half of the battle is?
What's the other half?
Fighting.
With blue and red lasers. That's the other half of the battle. Aim is not important, but firing those lasers is.
I'm kind of surprised that Project Motormouth main website only lists doctors. They don't have the additional character people, too.
It may be a relatively new thing.
Maybe. Doctors might be the biggest draw.
Oh, they're the biggest draw, yeah. Yes. But then the fact that, look, there's two more people. That's kind of cool.
All right, that's it for news. Sean, did you ever find the rest of your stuff that you lost before you came?
Series 7, Part 1 will be released on DVD the 29th of October.
You're supposed to announce that back with the Christmas episode.
He fell down on the job. I'm covering it for him now.
What?
That wasn't in my list of news.
Wasn't in my list of news either.
Well, then it's an added bonus for you, isn't it?
Out of order.
Wait, no. It releases in the UK on the 29th of October.
That's what I've been saying.
He said,
that's why we
only. He said releases.
Because it's relevant to us.
On?
His words, not mine.
I said releases.
Global podcast.
It releases in the UK on the 29th of October.
Thank you for clarifying.
There is no release date in the US as of yet that I'm aware of, but if you check TVshowsondvd.com, I'm sure.
I'm checking now. I'm pretty sure there is. I just don't remember what it is.
I'm surprised they don't have anything.
I am Oz the Great and Terrible. Move along.
Patience.
Poke you with a stick.
Feedback.
Feedback. Feedback. We've got some feedback. This is the slower lounge version of the song.
I missed the ya-ta-ta-ta-ta. Cha. Got the cha, but I didn't get the ya-ta-ta-ta.
November 13th, by the way.
I missed the ya-ta-ta-ta.
On
U.S.
I will strike thee down.
No, you won't.
We're in feedback. I'll strike you across the table. All right. First bit of feedback comes from Dan.
Dan writes, hi, guys. I have to actually write you an email this time since my hard drive failed on Saturday.
Oh, no.
My cell phone makes for a marginal backup. I am missing my spell check already.
You're anything like me, you're missing your keyboard.
I enjoyed listening to the Sonic Screwdriver debates. Sadly, I enjoyed them much more than the presidential debates. And thank you very much. And thank you for letting me be a small part of that. I can concur with most everything said, except for Keith's concept of scanning.
Why did you let Keith read this? He's going to get totally embarrassed now because
no, I've already read this.
I haven't read it, so I don't know.
I'm going to say this now. Is the fact
Stop. I got to get caught up here. Keith's concept of scanning. What does that mean?
With the Sonic.
Oh, God. There you go.
Because they've never truly stated what the scanning is doing either anytime throughout the entire series, it's open to interpretation. So this is Dan's interpretation.
Anything on the show? Do they ever explain this is the concept of traveling through space and time? It just does.
He says, my idea of scanning is moving a remote sensor over an area or an object and reading the results on a display. Think of an infrared camera or a police radar gun. Most of his earlier examples, I would define as probing. You can probe with light, sound, tools, etc. Think of shining a flashlight or poking a bear with a stick. This does not give you an organized data set in a report. The stick just lets you let your senses be the judge while letting you keep all your fingers. I'm referring to the Vashta Narada and the diseased gas mask-wearing children. This would include the Third Doctor's probing with the booby-trapped floor tiles and death to the Daleks. I compare that to looking for landmines in the sand with a bayonet. All in all, this is just a difference of opinion and general semantics anyways. Keith, I hope you don't take any personal offense. I don't. Again, I enjoy listening to your lively discussions on such topics. It reminds me of similar debates I had with my friends back in the 80s. Anyway, I've got to get back to swapping out and reloading a hard drive. Anyone got a screwdriver I could borrow? Dan.
Okay, Keith, you have 2 minutes to rebut.
That's how we use it. I don't know what the doctor does when he looks at the Sonic. I don't know what David Tennant did when he looked at the Sonic either. So it, just however you view it.
I would agree with the third doctor on the death of the Daleks
that, yeah, doing that for the booby trap, yeah.
I'd like to point out for the crowd at large
that he did it again. You'll notice he just said, and I quote, "I don't know what the doctor does when he looks at the Sonic. And I don't know what David Tennant did when he looked at it."
Okay.
So by definition, he does not consider anybody but Matt Smith to be the doctor.
Okay. I'm sorry. I did not slip of tongue. I do not know what a 11th doctor does when he looks at the Sonic. I don't know what 10th doctor does when he looks at the Sonic.
It's ingrained into him. It's wired. He's going to be so crushed when he leaves.
Oh, well, yes, I am.
Fall apart.
All right, moderators are not allowed to chide.
Oh, yes, we are. That's
so you, okay, yeah. Well, your 2 minutes are up. So actually, they weren't.
That's because he interrupted.
Anyway, go ahead. Well, in the presidential debate, there was all kinds of interrupting, and nobody really stuck to time either. So our next bit of feedback comes from
Malarkey. Oh, did you say Malarkey?
Big Bird.
Binders full of women.
See, I don't know all of the keywords.
Who's next? Next up is Brenda.
Hey,
Brenda.
Chrissy just sent us feedback.
No, it's been there since 10:48.
Oh, has it?
Yep.
Oh, timestamp. There you go.
You just got it.
I just got it. I'm reading Brenda's?
Yes.
Good. Brenda writes, "Dear Vortex Gang." I have a gang now. I've always wanted a gang.
Now, apparently, Brenda has a gang.
Brenda has a gang.
We're her gang.
Darn it. I'm never important enough to have my own gang. I have intended to write you guys for the past 2 weeks, but life has had other ideas. I've had a long series of rehearsals and performances, and the nonstop schedule has taken a toll on my free time, i.e., I've had none. I still have another couple of weeks of this craziness, but it includes an exciting trip to New York next weekend where I get to perform at Carnegie Hall.
That is awesome.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
How do you get to Carnegie Hall?
Practice.
I still miss that joke. Screwed that up. All right. Not you. I personally screwed it up. I'll tell that story another time. Even though I've been lucky enough to perform there many times over the past 20 years, it never gets old to walk out onto that stage. If I can manage to sneak a photo on the Carnegie stage, I'll send one in for the website.
Ooh, okay.
Sweet.
Wow. So not only is she performing, she's performed there many times.
That's awesome.
Now you're just bragging, Brenda.
How many people can say they performed at Carnegie Hall many times?
No, not many.
I wouldn't call what I did performing.
Well, you're not allowed to go back either.
Darn restraining order. I'll send one for the website. Meanwhile, I'm taking advantage of a rare couple of hours with nothing to do while I wait for my car to be serviced, so I'm putting together my thoughts for the gang. See, there we are again. We're a gang.
By the way, I'm impressed. I got to go back to Dan's. It was quite long for writing it on his cell phone. I'm lucky to get a paragraph out when I send email
on
my phone.
Now that you say that, you're right. Wow.
That's I'm sorry, Brenda. I just dawned on me. I was like, that was quite long for an email.
If they ever do a performance of being able to write long messages on phones, Dan could be at Carnegie Hall. I mean, that's a Carnegie Hall worthy event, right?
All right, Brenda. Sorry,
I'm not diminishing Brenda's achievements as a musician and performer at all. And if you haven't, you should look up Dr. Phil, and the two of you should coordinate your travel schedules. Now, I understand he's a scary driver, but...
He's not scary.
Only when he listens to us. Only when he listens to us.
I'm teasing Dr. Phil.
I love how Sean assigns traits to people, and then suddenly... Sean forgets that he assigned the trait to people, and suddenly that he believes his own hype.
It becomes fact.
So it becomes fact, yeah.
I am Lawrence of Arabia. I believe my own press. Haven't you heard? I'm just like Dr. Confidential. I can't take credit for that one. That one was me.
Wow. All right.
I've remained in something of a blue funk since saying goodbye to the Ponds. I'm not sure how much is because losing Amy and Rory, and how much is because New Who is gone for a while. Whatever the reason, I wept crocodile tears at the BBC videos of The Last Day of the Ponds and PS, and I keep going back to watch both of them again and again. Either I need some sort of ongoing catharsis, or I'm really into self-punishment.
Self-punishment.
Yeah, self-punishment. As you know, I'm a newbie to Classic Who, so I decided to use this gap time to begin my exploration of these episodes. I began with The Visitation, since you had it on the schedule a couple of weeks ago. Other than YouTube clips and other such segments...
That was Sean, not Brenda. If she could have wrote that...
Yeah, she could have wrote that... Wouldn't just carve "arg" on the title. Other than YouTube clips and other such segments, this was my first experience of an entire episode of Classic Who. I can't say it was exactly the best one for my introduction, but as long as I approach the classic stories with a mixture of suspended disbelief and tolerance for lost in space type effects, I'm able to enjoy them.
There you go.
There you go. With my free time so limited these days, the short episodes fit nicely into my wind-down time when I get home late at night, just before I head off to bed. For now, I'm limited to what is available on Netflix and or Amazon Prime, so I won't be able to follow any sort of choreographed schedule other than start at the beginning and take them as they come. Thus far, I've watched The Aztecs, The Mind Robber, and The Tomb of the Cybermen.
All of which we've...
We
haven't done Mind Robber.
Tomb of the... Yeah, we have. We've
Keith
done all
did
of
did a...
I, Chrissy and I watched The Mind Robber for Friday
he
Night
did
Who
a mini review of it.
Yeah.
It was a Friday Night Who that we couldn't be at, and he and Chrissy
watched you're right.
It.
We haven't
which
officially
Chrissy
done that
mostly
yet, have we?
Spearheaded that
yeah.
one.
So.
Yeah, you're right.
But we haven't officially properly.
That was early days, too.
Early days,
yeah.
You're right.
Oh, yeah. We were still at your old place.
Yeah.
So.
Well, good. That means I can still work that one into the schedule.
And that's why we watched it, because
it was
on Netflix.
I don't see a reason why not. I mean, it was,
oh, yeah,
it was,
I'd like to
he did kind of
it.
A quick, yeah, this is what I thought about it, blah, blah, blah. So.
Gotcha.
I don't remember what else he said about it because I don't pay attention to him. But
I don't remember what else I said about it because it was so long ago.
There's a difference between not paying attention and not listening. Oh. I just don't listen.
Well, that's true.
No, all three of those
it's
are good
he
ones,
disagrees so. With me, so I just quit listening.
Yeah, there is that.
Not always.
All right, back to Brenda.
I'm looking forward to progressing through the Doctors, and as I become more discriminating in my appreciation, I will probably begin making some strategic purchases to add to my complete collection of New Who. That's when I'll really need your input for selections worthy of my hard-earned dollars.
That's kind of a key thing. He strategically adds to his collection because he's not a completist
well,
as far as...
there's been a...
Huh?
Gee.
No.
That's he, what Keith
that's
does.
That's what Keith does. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you say Keith. I thought you said that's what he does. I'm like, no, we're talking about Brenda.
That's what Keith does.
That's what Keith does.
That's what I've done so far.
Strategically
aside
adds
from
to
the
his collection.
Aside from the two I randomly purchased for Friday Night Who.
He has the benefit of having us to own them already, and then he watches and goes, okay, I do like that one. So
I like that one.
Which I'm starting to formulate my Christmas list. So I'm thinking of the Doctor Who classics I want to put
now
on my list.
Now I know what to look for him for Christmas.
Yeah. Happiness Patrol.
I'm sorry, it includes a lot of special editions.
Because no home should be complete without a copy of Happiness Patrol.
Mine is.
Now, just out of curiosity, did you happen to be, I saw you furiously over there typing, did you happen to be looking up which ones are available on Netflix at the moment, or...
No, I was double checking to remember which one was Visitation.
That's okay. Visitation? Oh. That's the Sonic Screwdriver one that dies.
Yes.
Okay.
With the rainbow trout.
I was refreshing my mind of which one it was.
Off the top of my head, without
looking,
I know
now.
City of Death is on there. Leisure Hive is on there. Robot is on there. So go to Robot. No.
No,
Robot's Green
not.
Death.
Robot's not.
And, oh, it's not anymore.
Ark
okay.
in Space, The Three Doctors, The Aztecs, Pyramids of Mars, Pirate Planet.
Pyramids of Mars is what I was thinking of. And
the Rebos.
Whole Key to Time series is not on there. So I want to suggest, Brenda, you stay away from the Pirate Planet and...
The Rebos Operation.
The Rebos Operation.
Also included are The Mind Robber, Curse of Frenric, Leisure Hive, Fenric. Spearhead from Space, The Visitation, Horror of Fang Rock. Hold on, I got to go to the next page.
He went... All out of order. I was going to try to go
to
order.
This is the order. I'm watching.
This is the order that it's listed.
Yeah.
City of Death, Androids of Terra, which is another Key to Time.
So stay away from that.
Carnival of Monsters.
Ooh, she's got her own Netflix. She can
look. For those that don't know. Case of Edrazon.
In case you'd like to subscribe to Netflix, here's
The Green Death, Power of Kroll.
Stay away from
that. That's it.
So they've got four of the six.
And people ask me why our podcast is so long. What else does Brenda say?
Nobody asks you why you're
Yes, they do.
Send them to the meme link. Both of them.
All of them. There's three now.
So I think, with the exception of the Key to Time, if it says Key to Time anywhere in the subtitle.
Yeah, stay away from that one, Brenda.
Unfortunately, it doesn't on Netflix.
They're not all on there. Yeah, it does. It has on the... In the
lower corner, there should be a Key to Time.
No,
on the case.
Case, it says, yes. Key to Time. Yeah.
Yeah. But in the actual Netflix...
Well, it pops up there, though, when you...
You have to look at the picture, Brenda.
Well,
if it's
right
got
now,
Key to Time on the picture.
Right now, the only ones remaining, I think, are Ribose and Pirate Planet, right?
I just read all four of them.
You read all four? Well, there are five, so there's four out of the five on there.
Yeah. There are six that are in
the set. Just stay away from them.
Stay away from those, because it's not a whole
What were the other two? Stones of Blood was not.
Androids of Tara, Power of Kroll.
Okay.
Yes.
So
Pirate Planet and...
Stones of Blood is not on there, and...
Armageddon Factor. Those are the two that are not.
Look for the little stone emblem in the bottom of the corner.
Yeah. They all sort of stand alone, too. I mean, there are standalone stories. So, Brenda, if you run out of stuff, yeah, go ahead. But I would suggest you try to get a hold of the entire
season. Or at the very
least,
be aware that you are stepping into the middle of a longer story
because
arc that took
first
place over
one
the whole
of that
season.
Is
Ribose, and that's the one that's not on
no,
there.
No, Ribose is on
Ribose
there.
Is.
Oh, Ribose is.
Ribose
so
is
Ribose Pirate Planet. Then Stones are not.
Stones are not, but
Stones is in the middle,
is,
and then two more are in, and
the
then the last
Stones
one
is
not.
Second to the end.
No, it isn't. It's the third one.
Are you sure?
Yep.
Oh, okay. The last one's Armageddon Factor, so...
And that's
the last one. You won't get the resolution of
the
Key to
Time
series.
You won't get the resolution of the story. At any rate.
Destiny, did you read that one? Destiny of the Daleks?
Destiny is not on there.
It's not on there
None
anymore,
of the Dalek
it was.
Stories are on here.
Okay.
Darn you, Terry Nation.
Well, that might be the case.
Yeah.
Because there were some on there. I think that was on there. I want to...
I keep trying to skip ahead. And
something else.
I
haven't
gone through yet.
Oh, Caves. You read that one, right?
Caves is
on there still. About the special edition.
Well, you don't get bonus features on Netflix anyway. So.
That's true.
Continuing.
And you wouldn't be able to watch those, yeah, because you don't get that. So. Go ahead. Come on. Keep this moving.
Continuing the expansion of my Hooniverse, I've also made a foray into books with a few Kindle purchases, but I'm trying to contain my completionist tendencies. For years, I read every Star Trek novel that came out, both classic series and next gen, starting with the first books in each series. I finally got to the point that the only books I was reading were Star Trek ones, and I had to become a bit more selective. Brenda, I actually just sold a large chunk of my Star Trek novel collection because I had not only Star Trek and Next Gen, but once I'd made that commitment, Deep Space Nine and Voyager were only a jump away. So, yeah, I had all of them and I think I got about $20 for selling like 700 books. It was a fairly sad day.
It was an extensive collection,
but I kept ones that I enjoyed, but. I do enjoy the added dimensions that you get with the written word as compared to film television, so your input here will be valuable as well. Be sure that I will steer clear of the story of Martha.
That was the first thing that Keith was going to say, and he was opening his mouth as you read that.
I made a face.
I believe it was...
Which, and it sounds like the third Doctor story you should probably stay away from, too.
Not stories, just the
one.
Story. The one you reviewed.
I thought you pluralized it, sorry.
Immorality Tale was not very good. Now, do we know what's next up on the book review? Oh, because we're doing book reviews when you're gone.
You're doing book reviews when
Glenn's
I'm gone.
Glenn's going on holiday to Disney in December.
Yet.
I haven't picked mine, but Keith is doing
I'm doing Touched by an Angel.
Touched by an Angel. So we'll have some more book reviews coming up for you.
I'm sorry.
You sounded so happy when you said that.
No, but it's... Yes. And every time he says it, it sounds like Touched by an Angel, the like heartwarming CBS series.
I'm trying to get that allure.
Touched by an Angel.
Yeah. And that brings me to report my latest milestone. You may recall that I discovered your podcast early this year, and I've been mainlining them since that time. Because there was no new Who on at the time, I was content to stick with the episodes in recorded order and maintain that approach until New Who returned in September. That's cool. Sorry, we're passing pictures, I guess, back and forth. From that point, I would listen to each new episode as it was posted, then go back and pick up on the mainlining. Well, yesterday, I finally caught up to the present, and I have a few additional comments about a couple of items from the past few months for discussion. First of all, Brenda, congratulations on surviving 90...
Achievement unlocked.
90, well, now 95 episodes, so that's huge.
Wow.
Ugh. Jaws on the big screen. I first read the Benchley novel in the early summer of 75 while on a trip through Europe with a bunch of college kids. We passed the book among the group, and I got it just as we reached Italy. We had an afternoon free when we first arrived in Venice at our hotel on the beach at Lindo Gesolo. And so I sat in front of the window overlooking a long pier reaching out into the sea, read the book, and imagined a giant killer shark charging up to bite off the end of the pier. Later that summer, my roommate and I made a reconnaissance trip to Tallahassee, Florida to find an apartment and to get set up and begin our graduate work at FSU. We accomplished all we set out to do, and so we celebrated that evening with dinner and the movie of the summer, Jaws. I thought the book had scared me. The movie scared the bejesus out of me. After that final scene with Quint as the main course dinner for the shark, I was so shaken I was unable to operate the clutch in my car for several minutes. Really, we just sat in the parking lot until my knees worked again. As we were traveling back home the next day, I suddenly found myself feeling shaky with sweaty palms. And I finally realized the Jaws theme song was playing quietly on the radio in the background, and I was responding subliminally to it all over again. That's the power of film when it's done right.
Yep.
Wow.
The other thing that has that ability to frighten people that much is apparently Glenn shouting bang into his microphone. To date, though, we know it only scared one person.
As he took cover in a supermarket.
Stephen King. I found King early on and read almost everything he wrote in his early career. I really enjoyed Salem's Lot, The Shining, and especially The Stand, still one of my favorite books of all time, but sort of veered away from him when he ventured into the era of Cujo and Children of the Corn. I'm not much of a fan of the horror genre, and that period didn't appeal to me. I have found him again in recent years, however, and can heartily recommend Under the Dome and 11-22-63, the latter of which is a fascinating time travel story and coincidentally set around JFK's assassination, which occurred the day before Doctor Who premiered in the UK. King is a gifted storyteller, both in technique and imagination, and I hope everyone will explore some of his books. If you don't already admire his skills, I think you'll find a new appreciation for him. Well said. Musical Arthur Darvill. After his flat was burglarized and the photo of the damage showed some of his musical instruments, you commented you didn't know he was musical. I present the following link to a video I love showing his piano skills, although definitely not anyone's singing skills, as you'll see. Here's another one showing both Arthur and Matt playing piano, and that cute boy from Night Terrors adds a bit of drumming. Ooh. But again, singing skills for the trio, not so much. And then there's their singing of Bohemian Rhapsody from this summer's Comic-Con. I recall seeing a reading and interview once in which the three of them said they did a lot of singing and playing instruments on the set between takes. You know how I love music, so this makes me just love them all the more. Of course, these links will work better in show notes than the podcast should you choose to post them. If yes. Not, never mind. And we will have those in the show notes. Glenn's working on that now.
I am.
And that Comic-Con was that special charity panel they were a part of.
Oh, is that what it was?
Okay. Yeah.
A final random thought. In searching for the links above, I came across a clip of John Barrowman singing the Doctor Who theme when the cast appeared on the UK's Weakest Link show a few years ago. I was reminded of how fun this show was, and if you haven't already seen it, search it out on YouTube. It featured cast members from the RTD years, including K-9.
Ooh!
Who, if I'm not mistaken, was the first voted off.
Aww.
Well, that's what you do. You get rid of the...
Because the smartest person.
Obviously, he knew everything, so, you know, they had to vote.
I guess that's true, yeah.
You should feel good about that, Keith.
That's true.
So that's enough
rambling. I forgot how the show works.
That's enough rambling to make up for my silence in recent weeks. I doubt I'll get home from New York next weekend in time to write, so think of me on the 30th when I make it to the Big 6-0. I'll celebrate my big day by listening to that week's episode, I'm sure. Have a great week, Brenda in Atlanta.
Happy birthday, Brenda.
Happy
early birthday.
Just in case we forget, because we do that sort of thing.
This episode brought to you by Ginkoba.
It's Ginkgo Biloba.
That too.
Maybe there's a brand that's Ginkgoba.
Is it?
But I think the actual medicinal root or whatever it is Ginkgo Biloba. Biloba. Biloba.
Biloba.
Ginkgo
biloba.
Biloba.
It also tastes great with kumri.
Who's up next, Keith?
Next up is Chrissy.
Chrissy. Chrissy writes, a funny thing happened on the way to the TARDIS. Dear Vortex Boys, you know, I did get Neverland finished before I started listening to the podcast. So much for being prepared.
I'm sorry. I screwed up.
However, in parentheses, she puts, though it makes more sense for Neverland to be paired with Zagreus. If I'm remembering correctly, and I think I am, another parentheses, there isn't anything that happens in the Big Finish main range between these two that comes into play. And then she didn't do another parenthesis. She didn't close her parenthesis.
She closed her parentheses after, and I think...
Oh, I see. Oh, she's got a big
there's
one.
Two parentheses. There's two parentheses.
She's got a parenthesis inside a parenthesis, but the yeah, inside parenthesis is closed have, on the outside.
She didn't close
not.
The outside parenthesis. Yeah. So.
The entire rest of the email is the parentheses.
It's a good thing she doesn't like do anything with literature or anything.
So. Like, and, you know, if you were a, just kidding, if you were a teacher or a librarian.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Especially a librarian.
I mean, it needs to know words and sentences and stuff. Anyway, sentence structure is not important. Sorry.
Not for us.
No.
Never.
I can't spell, and I write news stories every day.
I think we're rubbing off on our listeners. I think they're osmosising us through this day.
We're dumbing them down.
Well, they were probably all very nice, mild-mannered people
smart.
Who led very orderly lives, and then they started listening to our podcast, and chaos erupted, and it's just all... And they all have ADHD now.
Oh, my gosh. Adderall.
Brought to you by...
She goes on to say, and here we are with Vicky. I actually like Vicky as a companion more than Susan. Vicky was smart and spunky, and she seemed to have more fun in her adventures with the Doctor. The rescue. The story's more or less just to get Vicky in the TARDIS. Not very much to it, but there are some good moments here. I love the Doctor saying, "Pity I didn't get a degree," after Ian says something about a medical something or other. That line comes really quickly, and you almost miss it, but it's funny. I also love that Vicky gets upset at Barbara for shooting Sandy. That's one of the moments that shows that Vicky isn't just going to be a replacement for Susan, that she's definitely a different character with her own backstory and personality. It's also an interesting moment for Barbara in that she's kind of been the leading lady slash heroine of Doctor Who to this point, but even she can make mistakes. The Romans. I think this one is considered the first time Doctor Who attempted comedy, and I think they pulled it off quite well. I love Barbara and Vicky's sister-type relationship, and the Doctor seems more light-hearted in this story. He definitely has a lot of fun trying to impress Vicky. I love it when Barbara is in the palace, and she keeps barely missing the Doctor and Vicky. That adds to some of the humor of the story. Also, Nero is delightfully disgusting, and... the end shot of him playing the lyre, fiddling, while Rome burns is really great. I have to make special mention of the BBC costume department for this story. I know the costume dramas is what BBC is known for, but the costumes in this story are fantastic. Have a great podcast, Chrissy.
Thank you, Chrissy. Our last bit of feedback comes from Holly from Wisconsin. She says, "Hey, guys. Great past few episodes. Before giving my thoughts on the rescue and the Romans, I want to briefly give my thoughts on the Visitation. I enjoyed the story, and I agree that having three companions along with the Doctor, and then having Roger the Highwayman along, took just a little away from the story. Now to the rescue and the Romans." Glenn, you're making a face.
It wasn't Roger, was she? Is she making a joke? It was Richard, wasn't it?
Or was it Richard?
It was Richard. Wasn't it? Richard Mace?
Maybe she just remembered.
Okay, that's okay.
I bet she just, yeah.
Probably.
Okay. Now on to the rescue and the Romans.
She got the rescue and the Romans and Richard. I
can't falter. I get names wrong all the time. I'm the worst at names, so.
Yeah, Ginkgo Ginbololaba.
I forgot how much I enjoy Ian and Barbara as companions.
Ginkgo biloba.
Why do I believe you? You get names wrong all the time.
I forgot how much I enjoy Ian and Barbara as companions. Is it me, or is the Doctor in these two episodes a little more out of it than usual? I like Vicky as a new member of Team TARDIS. Her excitement and awe when Ian and Barbara tell her about what year they are from, and when she sees the TARDIS for the first time, she's ready to go. The Romans was an interesting little jaunt. The corridor scene with Barbara trying to get away from Nero and the Doctor never seeing her had me groaning slightly. You'd think he'd recognize the sound of Barbara's voice. Tavius was quite the interesting guy by wanting to help Barbara right away when she first got captured and warning the doctor as well about future attacks on himself. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts on these two stories. Keep up the great work. Holly from Wisconsin.
Thank you, Holly.
And thank you to everybody who wrote in.
Yes. All right.
Well, I am ready. I've done my homework this week. I brought my sonic screwdriver. I am all set and prepared to do this podcast and talk Sonics. So let's go.
Neverland.
That's great, Sean.
Are we doing Neverland?
No.
I haven't listened to Neverland yet. That's this week. I'm on my homework list for this week.
You had Sonic Screwdriver.
Are we reviewing that next week?
This week?
Why no, next so next week is Talon's, but I'm doing it this week. So that
why is that so quiet? Oh, because the chip's underneath.
Probably.
Because it's always. Been
oh
that
God,
quiet.
I'm blind.
Oh,
Glenn sonicked me in my eye.
It's a good thing it's an audio podcast.
I see spots. Now I can't read the back of the DVD box.
Oh, wait, it is still visual for us.
Have you seen the doctor? No, just spots.
All right. The rest
this is a podcast for bad jokes.
You've heard that one, right?
No.
You've never heard that joke? Are you kidding me? Wow.
No, never.
You've never heard it either? You're nope. Older than I am, Glenn. You should have known that one.
By a year.
Well, if I've heard it, then you should know that.
What are you saying?
Guy goes to the
that I used to call Dr. Sawbones? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, back in my day, we played with a hoop and a stick. You've never heard the guy is complaining. He says, I see spots. Somebody asks him, have you seen a doctor? No, just spots. You've never heard that.
That's terrible.
That is really bad. I probably heard it and blocked it out of my mind.
Guy goes to the doctor and says, you know.
We can understand the joke.
There's more?
And why are you building backwards on the joke?
I was going to tell another one.
Oh.
The rescue.
When the rescue TARDIS me from this podcast
lands.
I am Oz, the great and terrible.
Click my heels together. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. Damn it, I'm still here.
It's so sad that we're going to that, considering we're so based in Kansas.
I know. As I was saying it, I thought to myself, we've never made Wizard of Oz jokes before. Oh, wait, there's a reason for that.
We hate Wizard of Oz jokes. All right.
All right, we got the giggles out now, right?
The rescue when the TARDIS lands on this supposedly.
It's hard to be funny with it being this hot.
I'm sorry, it's warm. We can't have the AC on.
We're going through an Indian summer right now. It was
in October.
We were outside filming on Friday.
We're not going through any Indian summer. It's been warm for one day.
No, it was yesterday, it was too.
2 days.
No, yeah. It wasn't this. Yesterday
this
was in the 60s.
This is not the same.
The day before that was the 60s. This no, is like in the 80s
it was
tonight.
70, it was 75 Saturday.
It's not in the 80s right now. I can promise you that.
It was cold in Kansas City.
We were out filming. We were out filming all day Friday, and froze our tuchuses off.
Yeah.
I mean, it was cold. It was very cold. Bundled up and had
And this weekend, it's been great. Short sleeves, jeans.
Yeah.
I pulled the shorts back out of my drawer.
It's currently 71 outside.
It's.
Oh, isn't it still 71? Because it was like 80-something today.
It's going to be 80-something again tomorrow. That's an Indian summer.
Indian summer.
According to the Weather Channel, it's 77 tomorrow.
Land of Oz.
I'm 82.
Yeah, it's going to get up.
You heard it from the Human Meteorology Society. 82 in Kansas tomorrow.
Can we review this?
All right, the rescue. When the TARDIS lands on the supposedly peaceful planet of Dido, the Doctor, Barbara, and Ian discover a crashed spaceship. The only survivors have been murdered by natives apart from a young orphan girl and a paralyzed man. Who is the strange creature, Coquillion, that they fear? And will they remain safe long enough to be rescued?
Dun, dun, dun!
Ooh, I didn't expect you to like it that much.
I loved this one.
This episode was...
Keith didn't like it.
No, I liked it. I'm trying to think of the right phrase because I don't know if it's one of the best of First Doctor, but it's pretty high up there.
Really?
I really enjoyed it.
I enjoyed this episode.
Maybe the
as we discovered tonight as I watched it on Friday, I had actually seen this one before and didn't remember it. It's a good story. It's a good introductory story for a companion. I give it high marks for that. And it explores some things about the Doctor and explores some things about Barbara that you don't see in previous episodes.
Yeah.
And Ian's just kind of there. Vicky's kind of a nice, like I said, it's a nice introduction for Vicky. Overall, though, I felt like it was just kind of a run-of-the-mill story besides those things. So, I mean, as far as greatness. I would rank it up there as one of the better ones I've seen, but I wouldn't rank it up there as one of the best Hartnell. Review.
Part of it feels rushed. It almost feels like they could have explored so much more about this planet of Dido.
See?
And so much more that happened. And
I'm glad they didn't.
The resolution seems so rushed.
That's what made it a good introductory story, was it was just a way to get Vicky into the TARDIS. And so it was perfectly confined in those two episodes. And 1 hour was, well, not even an hour, 40-some minutes was the perfect link for this, in my opinion. So
I agree. I think for me, that's one of the reasons why I enjoyed it so much is because it wasn't a big, epic, rambling story that required 12 different captures and escapes and running through corridors and all that kind of nonsense. Yes, we get some...
12 different rescues?
12 different rescues. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went there. We get the bit with Ian and the Doctor in the tomb and the Indiana Jones style traps, but it's just enough of it to kind of give you the semblance of, you know, okay, there's danger.
Oh, this is still the same show. Susan may be gone, but this is still the same show.
And some really horrible monster down in the pit, Sandy, apparently.
Which I love the fact that Sandy ended up being a pet. I thought that was a great turn of events.
It's just weird that Barbara shot her dog. Shot Vicky's dog.
That makes Barbara so much... That adds so much more depth to Barbara.
I don't think it adds depth.
Coming from a character that would never shoot anything when she started with the Doctor...
It was such a gut reaction. And it also, I think, it says so much for how her adventures have changed her. Just in the sense that, not that they made her cold and crass and that she just wouldn't shoot animals for no reason. She has gone through a lot since she started traveling with the Doctor. And I think that makes her a little more trigger happy when she thinks that things are attacking them, you know, that the danger is, she perceives the danger automatically now rather than looking at it and saying, okay, is this going to be, you know, dangerous or not. And unfortunately, I think that's kind of been bred into her now.
This is a very, very interesting point that I hadn't thought of until you just said that. We've gotten a lot of exploration in the new series with the Doctor fashioning people into weapons and this talk that he's corrupting people, basically, and kind of changing them, not always for the better. Barbara is... an intelligent woman. She's a school teacher. She knows a lot about stuff. And when she's dead set of...
She's compassionate,
too. She's very compassionate. When she's trying to change history in the Aztecs because, you know, these people shouldn't be sacrificed and this is wrong and everything. And she's compassionate and just blazing about it, that this is the way it should be. And the Doctor kind of has to talk her down from that and say, it's just not how that works. But yet... Let's make no bones about it. Yes, she shoots the animal because she thinks that there's a danger to Vicky. And she's being compassionate.
And protective.
Well, but...
I don't think there's so much compassion there. I think that's the wrong word.
No, she's not being compassionate.
I think it's just protective.
Well...
And instinctual. I think it's defensive. Yeah.
We'll say that.
I wouldn't go compassionate.
But she shot an ugly animal. Now, if this was a walking cute that had come lumbering up to her...
Probably
the instinct wouldn't have been there. So now this brings up an interesting dilemma in my mind. Now is this a case in point? Does this kind of lend some credence to that argument that the Doctor changes people? Because Barbara probably would not have.
She would have just been terrified and screamed. If she hadn't have been traveling with the Doctor so long.
There's an intellectual debate going on in my mind because
I don't think it's a matter of cute.
This is what, 11 episodes in now?
Yes.
Okay. After this much time traveling in the TARDIS with the Doctor, they've seen some really wild stuff.
And they're coming right off of the Dalek.
And they're coming right off of another Dalek and the horrors of that. I almost wish that we would get to the point where they are they've stopped being repulsed by the scary. Now, obviously, the show was made in the 60s. That's what these people were hired to do. Yeah. They were hired to be scared by the repulsive monster.
Right, right.
Or in this case, shoot it. But just as you travel, even if you don't necessarily get the wonder, I'm assuming that there was some wonder out there, even though all of these episodes really pretty much line up back to back to back, that it wasn't
even though
horror.
They were kidnapped.
Yeah.
It's fear, 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 scared, running, fear, fear, fear.
I wonder how scared, they running. How much PTSD did they have when they got landed back in?
That's why they were in Rome for a month.
Well, there's that.
They were high school teachers.
they already had enough.
You know what
they
I mean.
They went back and took no crap from anybody.
They were the best teachers ever. This guy was,
but all the students hated them.
This guy was mouthing off in class, and man, Barbara just stood up and she like karate jujitsu'd him into the blackboard, man. It was frightening. That teacher don't put up with nothing. But just, you understand where I'm coming from. Is it all of a sudden it does kind of go, well, wait a minute, maybe this does kind of lean some, because Barbara has always been in my mind. She's always ranked up there among not only my favorite companions, but favorites for that reason, is because she's not the shirking Violet. She comes at this from
she's very strong-willed. She's very strong-willed.
She's a strong woman. Background in history, if not science, but I mean, she comes at things with a logical mindset, and now she's shooting dogs.
I like where you're going with that, because it does make a little bit of sense. I think, though, you have to look at the fact that reference in the new series is maybe the later incarnations of the Doctor are
more references to
creating
current
weapons.
Companions.
Whereas in the past, I don't think that was a conscious or subliminal intent of the first Doctor. I think just the fact that these were the first people to travel with him outside his granddaughter, well, that we know of. And the fact that they're cast from 1960s London into these very, very intense and just wonderful things, and these incredible instances and all this danger and whatnot, I think that sort of changes a person. And I suppose that maybe you can look at that aspect from the new series, from the statement that is made in the new series, that maybe it's not intentional on the Doctor's part, but the way that it's addressed in the new series, it's almost like the Doctor, maybe if it's not a conscious decision to kind of weaponize his companions.
Just for the record, I don't think it's conscious. Yeah. I don't even think necessarily.
I think it's subliminal.
I don't even think it's subliminal. I think he has no intention of fashioning people into these people that they become.
No, I think
it's a byproduct of
the travel. It's a byproduct. So I guess in that, it, based on that statement, though, yeah, then no, I think you could equate this to the first Doctor and Barbara in this instance. Yeah,
it's just until you brought that up, it was just kind of suddenly all of a sudden it was like, oh,
yeah, I would agree.
So it was an interesting. Yeah, no, I don't think. I think it's just the downfall of the fact that we get a lot of romanticized notions about the Doctor. He's so wonderful. He is light itself. He is, and
look at how the companions treated him back then, though.
Yeah.
It wasn't that. They didn't hold as much reverence for the Doctor.
Yeah, exactly. But maybe that's just, I guess it's been built up over time that we fans have that same sense of reverence.
I think so,
that's kind of where you go with that. But I think what really worked for me with the story was the fact that it was short. We got a very nice, concise story that did introduce Vicky and did it very well. It gave the companion something to do. Although, Ian was a little short-shifted because he, spent his time in adventure mode and not really doing much of that. But, you have those episodes. You kind of deal with it. And then the Doctor, despite a stirringly brilliant moment at the beginning where they reference Susan, and he's put off by it. Mm-hmm. He's very...
Which it seems like the Doctor is recovering from the loss of Susan by sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just shutting down.
Sleep. Yeah.
Yeah. But then when he comes out of his nap, when he wakes up, it's almost like he's woken up from a coma and he's making up for the last 10 episodes because he's much more manic.
Another thing, when I looked at that, I thought, you know, there's been references throughout Classic Who, and even thinking in the new series, the Doctor just doesn't sleep. I mean, he does, but he has a different sleep schedule or pattern than humans do. So he goes for long periods of time without sleep. And so I wondered if maybe this is, you can kind of retrofit this into one of those, when he sleeps, he really does this power sleep. That is, it is almost comatose, and it's such a, because he goes for maybe such long periods of time, that this is like this power sleep is just what really just recharges his battery and is able to go for long periods.
Was it Invasion of the Dinosaurs that we watched that Pertwee nodded off in the middle of constructing a scientific
thing?
Yeah. We were like, what? So I think that's it. It's just
there's credence.
He's awake for months at a time, and then all of a sudden, poof, and he's out. Don't
disturb. Like
I also think though that what Keith said lends a little bit to that. That it's a depression sleep. Yeah. It's almost like instead of dealing with the loss of Susan, you go off and you sleep. You know, so you don't have to deal with it.
Yeah.
So. But he does. He's reinvigorated when he wakes up.
And I agree with Chrissy. I like the fact that Vicky's not another Susan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very much. I mean,
very completely different characters.
I feel bad in some ways that Susan gets bagged on for being Susan. I mean, she is the shirking violet. She screams and she
sets the template up.
Well, and she does. And it's, I mean, no disrespect to Susan. When I think of the early Doctor's time frame, I always think of the Doctor with Ian and Barbara. Everybody says Ian and Barbara are like one companion. It's like Amy and Rory. They're just, here we go, Ian and Barbara. Oh yeah, Susan was there too. I mean, this would be another example of crowded TARDIS. We've got the whole family.
Ian and Barbara were never by themselves.
There's three people in here. But we never talk about crowded family TARDIS in the early years. It's only in the J&T era with Davison. And
after we get used to only having one companion. You know,
then all of a sudden it's a crowded TARDIS. There was a crowded TARDIS right from the beginning. But Susan, I think, comes at it from a different perspective because she's almost bored with it. She's been traveling. Mm-hmm. She's, you know, she wants to set down roots. That's evident in the beginning, an unearthly child. She wants to go to school. She wants to, you know, hang out with her friends and listen to her rock music on her transistor. And she loves this particular period of Earth history. And so when she kind of gets caught back up in all this again, it's kind of like back to the, you know, ho-hum nature of traveling with grandfather. And so I think in a way that kind of diminishes her character a little bit because she never does get that awe and wonder. We get all that through Ian and Barbara.
Right.
So going to Vicky all of a sudden.
Well, but, and that's obviously evident, and it's evident in real life because that's part of the reason why Carol Ann Ford left the show.
Right.
Is because she felt that she was just that damsel in distress.
She's damsel in distress all the time. So you know, going from that to Vicky, it's easy to kind of be up on Vicky and seeing somebody come in with fresh eyes and be excited.
And having that spirit of
adventure. And having that spirit of adventure that Susan
had lost
somewhere along the way. So,
which I agree, but I also think, as opposed to Ian and Barbara, who kind of get kidnapped, Vicky is the first companion that we see with that awe of adventure, wanting to go along and wanting the bigger things in life, where Ian and Barbara just want to get home. Yeah. Susan, we don't know what her motivation was with going with the Doctor, but as you said, kind of gets tired of traveling and wants to settle down.
Yeah. Vicky is really... That's Clarence, an unearthly child, because she wants to stay on Earth.
And Vicky is the first companion we get that's, yes, let's go do this. I'm tired of being in Roman time and not doing anything for a month. Let's go have some adventures.
I think that's one of the things that really sparks the Doctor's interest in her.
Because I think so
at
too.
Last, he has found a kindred spirit. Mm-hmm. He has found somebody that he can relate to on that level.
And it's almost like, as great as Susan and Ian and Barbara were, he looks for that element in all that he saw in Vicky and all his other companions since then.
Yeah.
For the most part, there's that sense of adventure. Let's go have some fun. Let's see the universe.
That's a broad brush, but I would say for the most part. Because he's been, and
some of them do kind of take the Susan route of get tired of traveling, like Tegan.
I mean, I don't think you can count Liz Shaw because it was really no adventuring. That was a forced thing.
Yes,
so was,
that's true.
So was Jo Grant to a point until the Doctor warmed up to her and she expressed that spirit of adventure. But that was one of those forced pairings.
Almost more before they got the TARDIS fixed.
And not even before that. It was just more of, I mean, it was still an adventure thing, but it was so Earth located that I don't think you can attribute that until, I mean, he obviously invites her to go along because
I guess I consider,
but it's not something that happens right off the start.
In my thoughts, I think of people he asked to go travel with him on the TARDIS.
Yeah, and I'm running through my mind.
Yeah, as much as we love
Sarah and Barbara, yes,
he would not have asked them.
No,
they're
no.
just they but, just don't fit the mold. I mean, we also he came had to a, respect them. And
we
he
also
came to
had a different
them.
Personality.
That's true
as well. So well, I mean,
but we don't know for sure because if we build on this mythos of I stole a Time Lord and ran away, that you know that he stole a TARDIS and left Gallifrey, there had to have been something there that all of the backlore has since established as to why he's running from his people.
Not arguing that.
No, that's just what
I'm arguing as to whether he would have sought out people to adventure with him, because at the point that he picks up Ian and Barbara, he really seems content just to be traveling and exploring on his own with his granddaughter.
But that's just it.
He still has his companion.
He had his granddaughter. So she expressed some interest in that at some point in time.
Yes.
Now, she grew tired of it and wanted to settle down, and he was content to lock himself on Earth for an undisclosed amount of time to cater to her whims.
Yeah.
But I still think that spark was there. I still think initially Susan had to have expressed that, and he thought, you know who should come with me? Susan should come with me. I have to rescue her from the Gallifreyan crap that's going on.
Well,
let's get out of the system.
I think that was, well, it's hard to say.
We don't know.
It's all speculative.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway.
It's nice for Vicky to kind of come in and give us that spark and somebody that he can relate to.
Yeah.
We really see it in the Romans, but because he doesn't get to interact with her much
right.
in this.
This one, well, and this one, first, I think, is really kind of broadens the spectrum of the Doctor for me, because I've always looked at this from Unearthly Child up to a point, and I didn't realize what that point was until now. The Doctor was always this runaway, you know, get into danger, stay, you know, hands free and run away. It wasn't too jump into the face of danger. With the exception of wanting to go into the city to explore and the Daleks and some of that, he was always kind of that land here, oh, scary danger, flee type. Now, it didn't ever really work that way for him because they always got captured and had to work their way out of the situation. However, it wasn't always this need to rescue or put things right wherever he was. You know, so we didn't get that until later. But there's a nexus. There's always a point that I felt that Hartlock kind of shifted into that role of more explorer, more ready to go out and see the sights and ready to go out there and you know, get his hands dirty. And there was always some place, and I wasn't quite sure in the series where this was, especially now since we watched them out of order, and Hartnell's era and Troughton's era were the ones I'd seen the least of. Now I think I can pinpoint that the rescue was sort of that era, and it almost goes to the waking up from the invigorating sleep.
Yeah.
And suddenly we've got a different Doctor. We've got a Doctor that is more of a man of action, more of a – he's an inquisitor. He wants to go, you know, solve the mystery type thing. And that's evident in this one when he goes out and he's somewhere familiar where he should know these people, and things are – different right. and out of sorts, and so he's going to find out why. What's going on here? What's wrong? And just this whole I really like the Doctor in the story because he's willing to delve in and figure out what's going on here. And so
do you think
I enjoy
that. Can
that.
Be attributed to the fact that Susan's gone?
Maybe
now the granddaughter is out
maybe
of the picture. It,
it
kind of frees him up so that he doesn't have to worry about her.
Well, that's another
possible.
Thing. Is it because it's family? Is he more protective?
Yeah.
Is it? Because this is the interesting thing I found, and this I'm going to skip ahead just a little bit, but because go along with that is that in the Romans at the beginning, when Ian and Barbara kind of suggest that they need to come with him to look out for him, he's almost offended by that.
Yeah,
and
he
I
is.
Think though at that point you realize that he doesn't need the protection that I think everybody has felt, and even we as viewers felt that he needed in the past. And it's almost like maybe that he trusts that Ian and Barbara can hold their own at that point as well.
They've been traveling
so
long enough.
You wonder if well, and you wonder though that if maybe he's always felt responsible for them, but it's always been ultimately he's responsible for Susan. And so I wonder if that's a little bit of that. Now he's no longer responsible for a blood relative, if in fact she is. And suddenly he feels a little more freed up to be able to go and be a little more risky, have a little more risky behavior.
I think that fits. I think it totally makes sense for that. I think that tied in with, again, the Ian and Barbara are very much, they look at him through the audience's eyes, which is frail old man, mm-hmm. even though he obviously isn't.
Boy, he's not.
You know,
he'll prove that in the Romans too.
He gets to run off to Spain every 4 weeks.
And I don't know if that's why the rescue and the Romans are so sit so high with me, is the fact that that change in the Doctor, or it's the Doctor becoming the Doctor I know and love. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, this is
not is running
the,
away.
Is this the first one of season two?
No, it's middle of the second.
Middle of the second season. It's almost like
it's almost the halfway point, because he was well, it's just under the halfway point, because he was there 4 seasons, is that right?
Yeah.
So and the 4th season is not even a full season. Yeah, so, not a full season so. of Hartnell. So
I don't know, it just in a way it almost feels like they figured the formula out at this point.
Maybe
in,
so in some yeah. ways.
And figured out the characters.
Yeah. This is what we need to do.
Well, and I think that maybe they realized they needed a title character that is, for lack of a better word,
maybe
that is a little more adventurous. You know, somebody that is more willing to step out there and
as opposed to having Ian shoulder the responsibility.
Exactly,
which
yeah,
we've
exactly.
mentioned which we, in which earlier.
It, yeah, yeah, feels like it happens most frequently, or even Barbara, because I mean that to me the Aztecs, she's kind of the one shouldering that responsibility in the Aztecs.
I was concerned.
And to some extent, invasion or Dalek invasion of Earth, Susan almost has that.
Yeah, but I think that's because it's her last story, and they know that. And so since this is going to be her swan song, I think this is a. I think we're going to give her a little more of a send off by giving her more of a strong character.
I was a little worried we got to the end, and this is the first time I'd seen this one. I had not seen it so. When the Doctor calls the guy out, and all of a sudden it's revealed that it's a guy. And now, of course, I knew the guy was up to no good right off the bat. I knew he was involved with Coquillion in some
way.
Seems shady. He just seemed shady. I didn't know he was Coquillion. But when he calls him out, and then I'm like, are you kidding me? It's a Scooby-Doo ending? We're going to get a guy in a mask? But then the Doctor qualifies the statement by saying, those masks are only for ceremonial occasions. And I was like, oh, this is genius that he broke into this.
So it makes me wonder what this species looks like otherwise.
Yeah.
We've only seen Coquillion.
Well, I imagine
these are ceremonial masks.
There was the two guys that dispatched of him in the inn and drug the Doctor back to the TARDIS, or back to the ship.
Oh, they were. I thought they were from the...
Oh, the yeah, rocket. That's right.
They were from...
Yeah. That's right.
That's
because they didn't look anything like the spiky creatures.
They were in robes, remember?
Yeah, that's right.
I forgot about that. They were spacesuits. They were kind of gleaming white.
No, they were white. They almost looked like the War Games outfits to me from the Time Lords. The impression I got from that was that this race, what were they? Still survived.
The Dodoites?
Yeah, Dodoites still survived in some sort of maybe Dysonians? Some pocket thing, and they came and they were serving some justice, is what the impression I got.
I liked it, regardless of how it may have panned out. I felt just the...
Well, this were, yeah, when, those when weren't guys from the rocket, because they called off that rocket. Remember, that rocket didn't come because the distress signal went away. So that the rocket that was coming for the rescue came.
I didn't catch that either. Yeah.
In fact, that was the point of those two ominous guys that ends up dispatching of
Coquillion
and or drags Bennett. The Doctor back is because they don't want anybody coming. They don't want anybody to come and disturb their society, and so they kind of tidy things up. Which I thought I wouldn't like, because I thought this was almost kind of a rushed narrative as well. This is what happened. The Doctor has to wake up and say, well, I woke up here. And
that's what I felt.
You know, what's going on? And so maybe that's why you had that feeling like it needed to.
It felt a little rush at the end.
And so, but I like that little surprise and the mystery that's built there is around you. Maybe that's the reason why we all have maybe different view, or you and us have different views on it. And what happened there is because they left that up to the viewer's speculation. But that's what I got out of it, because the rocket ship that you hear the voices at the end over the radio after the Team TARDIS has left, and you hear them relaying that, well, the relay is gone, and they call off the mission. You hear that over the radio.
I don't remember that.
I heard the voices.
Okay.
Yes, but I assumed it just meant that they were getting close to landing.
They decided that they would turn back because they determined there was no life forms. And I got the impression that was the race kind of – this was cleaning things up so that nobody would come. Okay. We didn't have to worry about this crash vehicle.
That actually makes me like it better.
That's what I like about it. Again, not one of my top favorites, but we're coming up on something that's – almost replace Aztecs as my favorite.
So, really?
Really? Shall we move on almost to the Romans, or is there more you want to discuss about the rescue?
No, like I said, I felt two
episodes, not much to talk about.
We've done a fair job.
I felt really worried when we got into it and it was going to be the Scooby-Doo ending, but then they fixed it very quickly for me, and I liked the fact that we got a man of action doctor, that there's this kind of fight sequence in the thing.
A bit of a struggle.
He fights him.
He does. He does. Yeah.
He doesn't fare terribly well, but he.
Yeah. Well, but
he puts up a struggle.
It almost contrasts to the one in the Romans where he really gets the upper hand.
He mops the floor with that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Romans.
Unfortunately, it's contrasting, and I don't like, but that's okay.
Italy, 64 AD, enjoying a rare holiday with his companions. The doctor takes Vicky to Rome, where he is mistaken for the musician Maximus Petulian. He finds himself obliged to perform for Nero, or risk incurring the emperor's wrath. In his absence, Ian and Barbara have been kidnapped and sold into slavery. Can they escape and find the doctor before Rome is consumed by fire?
Dun, dun, dun! That was me.
Really?
I loved this story.
This story is really enjoyable.
I had not seen this one before this weekend.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I thought maybe I had, just in case. I went into this one going... I would have thought this for sure
was one of the ones you had seen.
I'm pretty sure I hadn't seen it, but like The Rescue, I might have seen it all at once because I don't remember watching it on disc. But when I got into this one, I had no recollection of it. I have seen pieces of it, just little pieces, snippets, in some of the Doctor Who documentaries on the other discs. And so that's why in the back of my mind, I thought there's a chance I might have seen this but it was as I saw the clips, I remembered just seeing those clips.
So this is a rarity then, because this is one of those that's new to all three of us.
All three of us, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's a roller coaster ride of a story, because first of all, it starts out with this really kind of jovial, we're having fun. The doctor's having these little quippy moments that you're just kind of giggling at because of the way he's being, and Ian kind of chiding with him about it and whatnot. So you've got this, they're all relaxed. They're just
almost to the point where when he says Chesterton, after he leaves, and
he says Chesterfield,
and he says Chesterfield, and she goes Chesterton, and he goes, she's calling for you. It was almost like William Hartnell botched his line, and then I thought, no, that had to have been scripted. There's no way you recover from that. There's no way you recover that well from that. And maybe he still did botch. Maybe he's just that good of an actor.
He's being feisty and complaining, and he walks off screen
feisty,
left.
Feisty, that's what I was saying.
He's being feisty. He walks off screen left, and then he comes in screen right, flubs the name, and immediately, she's calling for you, and he's packing things up, and, I'm leaving, and I don't feel I need to report my duties to anybody. And I almost went to somebody built an android duplicate of the doctor already?
Yeah, because he goes in one door and comes out another, and you kind of wonder, uh-oh.
Very quickly.
It's a switch.
Yeah, I really thought that for a minute, and I was like, okay. And then we didn't go there at all with it. I was like, oh, okay. I mean, it really was that kind of...
I should start back a little further, though, because we get this cliffhanger from the last series of the TARDIS landing on the cliff and falling off. And everybody's shifting, and then fade to black. And I think, what has happened? And suddenly, Ian's waking up, and we had a different idea here, at least. But then we decided, no, we're going to go this way with the story. So we just kind of pretended like we got out of there off-camera type thing. No big deal.
A month ago.
Yeah. And so
there's a lot of time jump.
Yeah, it's a little bit of that's kind of weird. So that's the lens to the roller coaster thing. But we've got the doctor going off and then the getting aggravated with Ian and Barbara because they kind of make the comment that, well, shouldn't we go along? And as though they're going to protect him. And it's like he gets all offended because you think I need protecting. And he's all excited and ready to take Vicky, who's got this, you know, she's already getting bored of being there for a month. And she has that conversation with Barbara on the trail about how she just, you know, they should be doing things. They should. And Barbara's exhausted, you know, and because she's been traveling for months. You kind of sympathize with Barbara, but you also sympathize with Vicky in that sense because you're thinking, yeah, you just started this trip. So you're all excited, ready to go, gung-ho to get out there.
So, I mean, it would be the equivalent of, let's go see the universe. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Rome.
Really?
64 AD.
64 AD? This is the other cool thing about that, though, is Vicky is exuberant.
Oh, she's
this entire episode. She's so excited about what she's seen.
Even after a month of doing nothing.
Despite the fact that it's 64 AD Rome. I mean, that's what's really cool about it. That's where I warmed up to Vicky right away, is the fact that, wow, she's really got this spirit of adventure. Yeah. I loved that.
One of the things I think I love about this story the most is that there isn't some ominous alien threat. So many times.
No alien threat. This is a pure historical.
Yeah. So many times. And
as was the Aztecs. Which is my other favorite Hartnell.
But,
and the Gunfighters, which is my other favorite Hartnell. So.
And
maybe
who,
I like the, maybe I only like the historicals.
And who we're used to being in historic, at least from my point of view, we're used to being in historic time.
With an outside influence.
With an outside influence and try to make it things right, and that's what causes outside
influence. We get in Time Meddler, and we get in things like Shakespeare Code, and especially in New Who.
Exactly. There was another one that I... the McCoy we just watched with Arthur.
Battlefield,
yes. That's another good example of...
I wouldn't call it a historical.
They went back to that time period at one point.
Speaking of complete tangent, I apologize. The episode of Dexter that we watched tonight as a group...
I haven't watched it yet.
I'm not going to spoil anything, but the second episode of the season.
Third,
you're right. Third episode of the season, directed by the Knight Commander, is what his credit is, from Battlefield. I kept asking Patrick, who is the guy? Look at his name. And I don't recognize the name at all. And then I had to think, Knight Commander. Had to be one of the guys in the helmets. That's the only thing that can come up with, because he didn't have a name. So, but I thought that was an interesting thing. Anyway, go ahead. Nice.
But that's one of the I know I came down hard on the side of the Aztecs. Maybe I need to go back and rewatch it after seeing this. But the
I thought you enjoyed the Aztecs, though.
I don't think I enjoyed it as much as the other ones. I think out of the three of us, I was the hardest on it.
I think he didn't like it. I mean, he definitely didn't like it as much as you.
Litmus test. But this one I thoroughly enjoyed. It's such a
another historical
breath of fresh air
with an outside influence,
with or without
visitation.
No, the unicorn and the wasp.
Vincent and the Doctor.
Vincent and the Doctor.
I mean, most.
Sorry, you were naming some, and I thought, wow, you didn't go nearly far enough because there's a bunch of them.
I was trying to stick to classic Who.
Oh, I'm sorry.
When I go back to. For these stories, I try to view in classic Who only and not let new Who cloud my view of these stories.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So we've got, we've got Time Meddler.
Time Meddler. Oh, yeah. Okay. Time Meddler stuck in my head as a new series title, and so that's why I was...
Oh, no. That's
why
the first
I thought
Doctor
you went
story.
There, and I thought, wow, okay. Yeah, Time Meddler Time with Meddler. The meddling monk.
And maybe that's the first instance of historical with outside influence. I don't know. I haven't done the research.
I don't remember.
Might be.
It's the first thing that comes to my mind as... Earliest with outside influence.
Daleks and Dalek Invasion Earth are specifically set.
Yeah. Well, Daleks is on a completely different planet.
Marco Polo, but it's not complete.
Marco Polo,
but it does not have
does
any.
Not have any outside influence. I'm not sure about Reign of Terror. Reign of Terror is set during the French Revolution, but I don't know if there's an outside influence. Sensorites on another planet.
Tenth planet is on another planet.
No, tenth planet's on.
Is Earth. It on Earth? Mm-hmm. But it's still future.
Present day. Well, no, it is future Earth.
Yeah.
Future to future 1960s.
To that think, time.
It's 1980, I think, is what 1980s.
I don't remember any historical Patrick Troughtons other than the War Games, but obviously that's outside influence. Planet.
Yeah.
No, I.
Well, there obviously has to be where he picks up Jamie.
The Highlanders. Oh, the Highlanders, but it, yeah, well, it doesn't exist in formats.
We haven't seen it. Anyway.
We haven't seen it anyway. But
I'm sure there are. Anyway, so.
But sorry. That's what I really enjoyed about this story. I don't know. Maybe because it's played for more comedic than the Aztecs.
That's the other thing I was
with
say.
The more serious.
Yeah,
and well, we still get the reiterated point of you can't change the past. And I find it so interesting. Barbara says something along those lines, doesn't she?
Don't you think she learned though from the Aztecs?
That's why I find it so interesting.
Well, I think that's why she makes the mention.
A nice tie-in.
I think. Yeah. Oh, yes.
It's very nice and more growth for that character.
Yeah. No, I agree. That's another thing that lends to the roller coasterness of this, because to me, despite the little bit of humor that we find in the first episode at the very beginning, it's not until the Doctor and Victi get to Nero's court in that one episode that I felt there was just genuinely comedy and it was meant to be light and funny. That's when
even
we
more
meet Nero.
Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Running through corridors.
Yeah.
Well, we get running through corridors. We get this mystery and intrigue of what's going on. The Doctor's not quite sure what's going on, but obviously he's part of it.
But he just
or indirectly part of it. But anyway, that's where the comedy is, because to me, the whole second episode, there's no comedy in there at all. This is Ian and Barbara being captured and taken to be slaves. And then Barbara being sold and going off to London and Ian on the ship. And it was all dark and there was no humor there. There's no funny. I'm sorry.
There's little moments
with the Doctor and Vicky, in which you've got a little more light moments than what's going on.
Well, when he's talking his way out of playing. For
yeah,
Nero,
but it's more of a light thing. It's not really humor. It's funny, but there's funny moments. But it's not until we get to that third episode where it really just feels like the episode's all built for comedy. And so I find it interesting, especially that Chrissy said that, you know, that this was the first attempt at funny. And I think it probably was, but it's not like the entire story is humorous.
Thing isn't, yeah.
That's what I said. This lends to the roller coaster. Now, it sounds like I'm complaining, but I'm not. I liked that. Yeah. I thought this was neat because it was almost like we got little chunks of different style of story in each episode. And so I liked that about this, which you wouldn't think I would because I'm kind of a consistent guy. But
this is one of those instances where it was done right.
It was done right. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think there are people out there, there are Who fans out there that will complain about the comedic nature of the Romans that I've read. And I think what it boils down to is they discount the rest of the story. They don't look at episode 2, which is more serious. They don't look at episode 1,
very
which is fun. But not necessarily, you know, it's fun and funny, but not necessarily hysterically funny. They look at episode 3, which almost crosses into farce.
But,
and that's what they really kind of focus on.
But we come back and we get serious again at the end of episode 3, because now we have the fight between Ian and his friend, and I can't remember the friend's name. And the big cliffhanger is him coming down to cut Ian's head off in this battle. And so and Nero there's a change in the character, because Nero's been this, you know, funny, farcical character for all the way up until the point where he decides he's been embarrassed by the Doctor, and he runs off and he takes Barbara to go watch this fight, and suddenly he kind of changes.
He has his
dark side to him, which is the Nero that we know from history. And so, we know Nero was narcissistic, and we know that Nero also was a bit mad. And so what is it?
Delos.
Delos was the friend, yes. And so we swing back to that dark side just in time for the cliffhanger. So because you couldn't have comedy right up to the cliffhanger, but there's almost enough of a transition there that it works.
And I like the twist at the end where after the Aztecs and the Doctor was so insistent and nothing changed despite his almost getting engaged and married, then he is what causes Rome to burn, I thought was fantastic.
Yeah. Now, he does play fast and loose with that, though, because...
Oh, he does.
It was accidental. I don't think he intentionally did it.
It wasn't on purpose.
I think he's hiding his spectacles because they are certainly out of time, and we would have had this, what is it, anachronistic issue. But
it's not like he's wearing self-lacing shoes and a hoverboard or anything.
Exactly. So, but we would have this issue there. So, but I think that was totally accidental. But he's also almost surprised that he was the cause.
Yeah.
And he's not really the cause of the fire. He was the influence behind the fire.
He was the inspiration.
So it's like he said, somebody else could have suggested it to Nero. It's not necessarily that he was responsible, but ultimately, yeah, he really kind of is. And I like that. That was cool. Especially since that's the first fire he was responsible for, and then later he was responsible for another one.
And how serendipitous that
I know,
we did this.
We just watched that 2 weeks ago. Yeah. 3 weeks ago.
Two Fridays ago.
Three Fridays. Romans would have been a Friday. Rescue would have been a Friday. Yeah, yeah. Visitation would have been a Friday.
Yeah.
2 weeks, not including this past. I like how Ian gets to be Spartacus. I mean, that's what they did. They did Spartacus. He starts off and he's captured and he goes on the boat and the boat crashes and washes up ashore. And now he's a gladiator and now he's in the arena and then he gets freed. And it's like, and
you're genuinely concerned for both he and Barbara. Yeah. Because it's wow, we're totally, number one, not only are we separated from the Doctor and Vicky because they're off going to Rome. Now we've got Ian on a boat and
how are
Barbara
they
being
come back
sold
together?
Off to, and how are we going to get back together? It's actually that moment of, wow, what's
and then the fact
here?
That the very,
I would have seen this for the first time, not knowing what was happening. And then, they obviously get back together.
But yeah. But then
I've seen episodes after this.
The fact that they do, and the Doctor,
they don't.
they get back together at the very end, back at the estate, and didn't realize they were crossing paths the entire time.
And the Doctor seems to be completely not only disinterested, but he would disbelieve anything that happened to them.
Anyway, you were talking about Spartacus. I'm sorry.
I love the fact that Ian gets a Spartacus moment. I love that before that we get a little bit of a relationship moment going on with Ian and Barbara where she's combing his hair.
Oh, they're flirting, yeah.
And they're kind of flirting with each other, which I think is
it's the most flirtatious I think we've seen them up until this point.
I loved the fast one she pulls over about, there's ice in the fridge. And so he turns around and goes, he's standing there in his toga and his sandals, and three steps in, he goes,
hey, wait a minute.
It's wonderful that they come full circle with that, too.
Yeah. Yes.
Wonderful
that they come full circle. He pulls it on her at the end. I liked just about everything in this story. It was just wonderful.
I have no complaint. Hardly any complaint.
I do have a complaint.
I remembered one as I was saying that. I don't have any complaints.
The farcical nature of the story in episode 3, I don't mind. The near missing of all of our main characters in this one corridor where they don't really connect with each other. Okay. This is a very, very tired movie plot trope. It should be buried and put away and never brought out again. I remember as a kid.
Let me defend you by saying not from the today's standard either. Not because we have seen films that have done it since 1965 or whenever this would have been.
It's been
up to now.
65.
I've seen old classic films where this has been a trope.
Yeah. It just.
Well, Marx Brothers films.
Admittedly, yeah, the first time
Three Stooges shorts that do this.
First time it was probably funny. Every subsequent time,
Martin and
not
Lewis
so much.
Done this.
I mean, I remember as a kid watching, not counting Scooby-Doo, obviously, watching Benji the Hunted.
Mm. Oh, Benji!
Do you remember Benji the Hunted?
I remember Benji the Hunted.
Hey, look, Keith Interchild just surfaced.
There were sequels, did you know that?
To Benji the Hunted?
Yeah.
Benji the Hunted is a sequel.
Is it?
Benji was the first. Actually,
maybe
that's
what
not
I'm
true.
Remembering.
There was another film before Benji that does not have Benji in the title, and that's what sparked the Benji franchise. And then there was Benji, Benji the Hunted, and I think there's one more.
I think I saw all four when I was growing up.
I think that
Benji Goes Bananas.
Anyway, Benji. Yeah. Benji Goes to Monte Carlo.
Honestly, my Benji favorite Benji movie is not a Benji movie. It's Oh Heavenly Dog, where it's Benji. Chevy Chase has died, and he's come back as Benji.
I don't remember that one.
Gene Seymour's fantastic. Anyway, so I'd seen Benji the Hunted as a kid.
Okay. Benji. Oh, there's more. Benji. For the love of Benji. Benji's very own Christmas story. Oh, Heavenly Dog, Benji the Hunted, and Benji on the Leash.
Huh. Then there you go.
Benji on the Leash was as new as 2004.
When was Benji the Hunted?
1987. That would have been, to me, that was the last movie. Now that I think about it, that was the last Benji movie.
Well, it was the first one I was introduced to. Different studio too. I think it was a Disney production versus some of the other ones because the rights had changed.
I want to say that one of the other, For the Love of Benji, might have been Disney too.
Now I don't remember those other times.
I say I saw Benji the Hunted as a kid. Obviously, 87 meant I was probably a freshman in high school. I'm thinking that's right. So I'm watching I'm watching Benji the Hunted because I loved Benji growing up. And it's the Benji's lost in the woods, and he's got, I don't know, who's he protecting? Are they bear cubs or something that he's looking after?
Yeah, I think that's right.
And he has the opportunity to be rescued, but he can't because the cubs are there, and he's got to see them back to his mom and do the right thing. And the movie, as soon as they set up the first one, it's a near-miss rescue. And I looked at this movie, and I got angry because I knew that's where they were going to go with it. And every 20 minutes, there was an almost where the paths nearly got together and then didn't through the whole movie.
They were tiger or leopard cubs.
Leopard cubs.
Maybe because of Benji, I don't have a problem with that.
Cougar cubs.
It doesn't matter. Because even at that age, even as a freshman, I had seen that before. You remember Heidi?
I don't remember Heidi.
Heidi almost meeting up with her grandfather over and over and over. Pinocchio almost being rescued by Geppetto, but the crash of lightning and the thunder hits, and he can't hear him inside. Every single time. It's not a good trope. It should be buried and left
alone.
Which
it seems it has been.
Oh,
almost.
Wasn't even a theme in No Deposit, No Return with Don Knotts.
Yeah.
And,
It's just tired.
Gavin.
It's just Gavin McGraw.
McGraw?
No.
That's a
Gavin McGraw.
Darren McGavin. That's who you're talking. We'll get there eventually.
Darren McGavin, yeah.
So
great movie.
It's just one of those things. And so when we got to that scene.
Who doesn't want the kids back?
And the doctor
sorry.
You know, at the last minute gets turned around and doesn't, he can't hear Barbara from 10 feet down the hallway. I started to get that and my hackles went up because I all of a sudden it intruded on that sphere of no, don't go there.
I know this comes before
because it's a farce. I let it go.
Mm-hmm. It had very much a Benny
Hill
vibe.
That's what makes it excused. It's within that humor of that third episode.
It just had a very Benny Hill feel to me watching,
especially Nero.
Yeah, especially Nero. Yeah,
everything Nero did was before he turned sinister.
Yeah,
I don't know about Benny Hill, but yes, no, yeah.
I could almost hear the music going on in the background.
Oh, when he's chasing Barbara around the hallways and, you know, around the bed and everything.
I guess that was very Benny Hill. If you had sped
that footage up with the music to it, it would have been right there.
Little yakety sax.
But that was my one complaint about it, is that I didn't like that aspect of the almost. And the same thing in the slave market when they're bringing Broad up and the doctor and Vicky are standing right there. And then they turn around and walk off. And then Barbara's trotted out on stage. It's like, oh, you're doing it to me through this whole thing, aren't you?
Well, and then there's the instance where Barbara's new owner is going to go talk to the doctor. And she was going to go with him. And he's like, nope, stay here.
You know, my only complaint in the whole thing is the slave master comes out at one point, steps out from talking to Ian and what's his name behind bars. Or maybe it was even Barbara behind bars, who was somebody. He walks out. There's the two guys, and they're doing the sword fighting, and obviously they're just practicing. It's the worst choreographed sword fight I've ever seen. The one guy like slaps the guy's sword twice.
I don't even remember that
scene. What are you doing? What's the point of that? I mean, come on, if you're practicing, you're practicing. But man, make it look like you're really fighting each other. What redeemed it was the fantastic sword fight between
Ian and
what's his name, which really looked like they were going at it.
That guy, I watched some of the documentary on this, and the actor who played Delos, Peter Diamond, apparently was an action stunt performer. Mm. And so they had worked with him before.
So Ian was forced to have to.
They worked with him before and
bring his game.
He's good enough that because we know the physicality of what we've got for these guys to do. Mm-hmm. We'll just bring him in, and he's a good enough actor. He can fudge some of the lines.
Oh, he was fantastic.
He's got. And he did a great job.
He seemed very loyal. That's a yeah. In such few lines and such a small part, you could really tell his loyalty to Ian, and the same the other way.
Yeah,
it was just that was. They really felt like they, in fact, I was almost sad by the fact that they have this separation after, you know, he goes off to well, cause he helps him escape because he burns the guy. Cause they snuck in right. as the mob that was going to go burn down, Rome. And then like, there's that moment where he helps him escape and that's it. You don't get this, you know, thanks. I appreciate it. You were so,
yeah.
such a great
no,
friend.
No, no,
I
mean, goodbye.
I wanted right. that. Yeah. And it didn't happen. Suddenly we're back in, although that he, clearly, that's where he went because he said he was going the same place.
Yeah.
He was going to the same town, so. And he was not going to get captured again. That's what he said.
Once again, we've got a great bit with the doctor. We find out from the creepy old woman selling tapestries in the town square that apparently they've set up shop in an abandoned house.
They've been squatting.
They've been squatting. So here's the doctor. He's moved into some place. He's drinking the guy's booze. He's running around eating the food out of his larder and enjoying himself on somebody else's nickel. And it's like, you're not such a reputable man, I think.
You know, it's excusable. No, really.
I'm
I
not
mean,
complaining
it reminds me of Axel. It reminds me of Axel Foley. Beverly Hills Cop. He finds a house. Somebody that's gone.
You stole the house. How do you steal a house?
Is there anything else you guys want to talk about this?
I feel bad we kind of talked circles around Keith.
But I would
no, it's enjoyable. Really it's
Keith, what'd you think of this story?
I'd own this.
You do?
I would.
Oh, you would own this. I thought you said I own this.
No, what? I would own this.
You would own this.
Attaboy.
This is one of the few first doctors I would own.
Attaboy.
Well, you haven't really been exposed to too many of them yet.
No, it's
well, there's
true,
not a whole lot to be exposed to.
Man, unfortunately, that's true. I was under the impression that would. I'd actually been putting more on the schedule because I kind of thought, wow, we've kind of been doing the first doctor to service. We need to get through some more of these. And then really began realizing that there's not as many available as I thought there were.
Yeah.
That despite the length of time, that there's a lot of missing episodes. Not as many for Troughton's era, obviously, but there's a lot of them out there.
And is this one right before Time Meddler? Or is there another?
There's an episode in between. There's a couple.
Next
would be the Web Planet.
But this is the story
there's a few because, Web Planet was next.
And then the Crusade.
The Space Museum and the Chase.
And then Time Meddler.
Yeah.
But the Doctor I really enjoyed in the Time Meddler, this is kind of where I see his roots beginning.
These two stories.
And that's one of the things
that
makes
this most
enjoyable.
I just couldn't put my finger because I don't feel like I'd seen enough.
Yeah.
Couldn't put my finger on where that divide was. And I think this has nailed it down. Yeah.
And these two stories, for me, until we saw Time Meddler, there was a divide between Hartnell and all the doctors. And this is where.
Starting to bridge that gap a little
He's
bit.
He's that character I know and love.
Yeah. Speaking of Hartnell, this is you tweeted out something interesting that because Hartnell's giggling through most of the story.
Oh, he was very much like Yoda.
he was like Yoda.
No, Yoda was very much like Hartnell.
Or vice versa.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what I tweeted. I wonder if George Lucas got some ideas from Hartnell for Yoda on this.
That wasn't Lucas. It would have been Frank Oz.
Yeah.
He really invented the character.
All he needs to do is speak backwards, and he's Yoda in this.
Travel the vortex, we must. Watching Hartnell in these and his fights with the deaf mute or whatever he was, where he just mops the floor with the guy, and Vicky's kind of like, "Wow, are you all right?" He goes, "Oh yeah, I'm gifted in the art of fisticuffs. Every now and then, I like dust him
Love
off."
Loved that.
Like,
Loved it. Gosh,
things I never thought I'd hear him say. What?
That's the doctor I know and love.
Fisticuffs is what the first doctor called Venetian.
Acuto. Yeah.
I don't think there was much Venetian in it. I think he just bare knuckle boxed the guy.
I think in between the time he learned the art of Venetian,
but he's so in the moment and so just. go with the flow and feel it. And I said this on Friday Night Who. I was like, I know that William Hartnell, as an actor, he specifically gravitated toward Doctor Who because he wanted to get away from the gruff drill sergeant demeanor that he'd kind of been typecast in for most of his other career. Mm-hmm. I watch him as Doctor Who, whether it's grumpy grandfather or this guy, and I cannot picture him at all as gruff drill instructor sergeant kind of person.
Yeah.
Now, I also feel bad that it wasn't until I watched one of the I think it was the documentary on the rescue the previous week. Glenn's going to laugh. I did not know that this was not Hartnell's hair.
You're right, I'm going to laugh. How could you not tell that was a wig?
I totally thought that was Hartnell's hair.
Oh, my God.
I just took it for granted that it was. I didn't think about it.
You took it for granted that it was his hair?
Yeah. I didn't even think about it. There were times where I thought, that kind of looks like a wig.
It is so wig-like.
That kind of looks like George Washington's hair.
It's obviously styled badly.
Yeah. But I assumed it was just a style.
I didn't imagine he wore his hair out in public that way.
That's how they styled it for the
doctor. I just thought it was his hair. And there's a production photo of them sitting around.
Hartnell was really a hippie. He kind of wore it down around the front. It's just really kind of hung over his ears, right?
There's a production photo on the rescue of them sitting around the spaceship set. And so it's dated. You can tell when this is. This is not like from earlier in the show. And he's just sitting there with his hair slicked back. And it's like, I mean, I did not.
You're right. I'm going to laugh. I don't know why I should laugh, but I mean, I just guess maybe because I've known
all these years, so I've just assumed that was his hair.
Horrible hair.
Yeah, it's really bad wig.
I'm glad they got away with using wigs.
Well, until the movie.
Yeah, precedent for Paul McGann. That's probably how they sold him. You know, Bill Hartnell wore a wig. Really? I thought that was his hair.
I think he said, I get to do Doctor Who? I'll wear a wig. You want me to come back and do Doctor Who? As long as I don't have to wear the wig.
They had me at hello, and then we negotiated.
Sean, what's coming up on the schedule next week?
Oh, next week we get magic and mystery and mayhem in the sewers of Victorian, or is it Edwardian? I can't ever remember. London. Cue the thunder and lightning. Okay. We get the doctor.
That was terrible.
Boom. Boom. We get
one Victorian era.
One Victorian era. Sorry. We get Leela in her pantaloons.
She's wearing pants.
Pantaloons.
We get
that's
doctor.
French for pants.
I haven't got that far in my studies yet.
I can tell you now, that's French for pants.
She does wear pants. We get the doctor she does wear pants. Before changing out of it into her pantaloons. Yes,
but pants are pantaloons.
We get the doctor dressed as Sherlock Holmes.
She wears a nice Victorian dress, or an Edwardian dress, is what she does.
Until she gets out of it and she's running around in her underwear.
Well, those aren't pantaloons.
But it's Edwardian pants. It's pantaloons.
Those aren't pantaloons.
Those are pantaloons.
No.
Bloomers.
Bloomers is what they are.
Yeah. We get Leela in her bloomers.
Okay,
bloomers.
That's better. Yeah. Pantaloons are French pants.
She wore pants. She wore pants in Horror Fang Rock.
She did. And a sweater.
Yep.
And still looked very fetching in it.
Sean's excited about next week.
I'm excited about next week. We get
knickers.
We get knickers. There we go. That's the word.
Knickers. She runs around in her knickers.
And we get the doctor dressed in Sherlock Holmes.
Edwardian knickers. Edwardian,
sadly.
There's also I can't say because I don't want to ruin the surprise.
There's a talon of some sort.
The talons.
I sort of wish we'd have paired up Django and Lightfoot with this. Once we're introduced to him in this story.
That's not a bad idea.
That's when we can follow him up.
That's a whole lot of Django Lightfoot to listen to. I don't think we're going to do that yet.
Three seasons of Django Lightfoot. Have it on the schedule by next week.
First episode.
Yeah. That's okay. Sean went to the last day to listen to it anyway.
Yeah, I would. Talons of Wen Chang is next week on Friday Night Who, which is a little early, but our celebration for Halloween for this year. Because it's scary. And we'll be talking a lot, I imagine, about Talons of Wen Chang on our show.
Why didn't
next
we
week?
Wait and review Invaders from Mars around Halloween?
Because
next
we were
week
trying
would
to
have been perfect.
Because we were trying to work through.
I was trying to get the spare parts.
Where
were you? We discussed this last time.
Yes.
So that's next.
All right. Anything else that we need the listener to know about before we take off?
Oh, November 5th on the Adventures of Time, Space, and Music feed, our music,
a friend of the show, Dr. Phil,
yes,
is his podcast, Adventures of Time, Space, and Music.
Our music reviews of this two Silurian season 5 episodes, Hungry Earth, Cold Blood, will be hitting the feed. The one that we talked about recording a long time ago.
Doctor Who, yeah, Doctor Who. Dr. Phil invited us to be part of a season-long Murray Gold retrospective of season... That was 5. Season 5 has been that long ago.
It was before season 5 came out.
And actually, us.
I'm pretty sure 5 comes before 6.
No,
us and some
we
other.
We recorded it. It wasn't so much a retrospective.
Us and some other podcasters were invited to come and pick our favorite stories or the stories we wanted to review from that season. And we chose the two parter, the Silurian two parter. And
because
so,
I was
yeah.
such a Silurian fan at the time, too.
Well, yeah.
That was before I was introduced
to
Cybermen.
You knew those monsters pretty well because you'd seen everything.
That was before Cybermen.
That definitely may have had something to do with it.
I've seen those guys.
Anyway, that's coming out. You said November...
November 5th, I believe.
5th.
Remember.
Yeah. I would like to warn the listeners that was a long time ago. So there are a few comments that might sound dated, and that's why.
Because
but
it is.
It's... I've already actually got a sneak peek of it, and Dr. Phil did a nice job putting
it
together.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to everybody else getting to hear it.
But the promo in front of it's new.
Your promo, yeah.
Well, that's the only promo we have.
Well, Dr. Phil's promo is on there, too. His open is on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Dr. Phil said maybe we could do it as a side trip or something after we, you know.
I'll see.
We'll give him a 2-week exclusive before we put it up on our phone. I want to hear, honestly, is I want to go back and I want to hear the whole series and hear what other podcasters said about other episodes. I think that would be really interesting.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Well,
and it would probably completely color my perception.
It's already started on his
feed, hasn't it? Yes, it has. I'm trying to remember the last podcasters that came out. I want to say Radio Free Scaro.
They might have done one, yeah.
I
haven't listened to
Radio Rassilon was the most recent one.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you remember which episode they did?
I want to say Victory of the Daleks.
Oh, I'm not too far behind then. Okay, good.
Yeah.
I could be completely wrong.
Because, you know, if you enjoy listening to us prattle on forever, imagine listening to us prattle on about a Murray Gold score. That's...
We really sound like we knew what we were talking about.
We do. I was impressed when we went into it because we went and rewatched the episode beforehand so that we could really pay attention to the music.
All right, well, let's not give too much away. This is a tease. So
it's a tease.
We'll talk about it. We'll remind everybody next week.
I was impressed that we kind of sort of sounded like we knew what we were doing for being young and wet behind the ears.
Yeah.
All right.
In some cases, we're old and wet behind the ears.
That's going to do it for this week. Until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Good night, everyone.
Be seeing you.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.